Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee, and we have an excellent show coming up for you today. We've got the Comic-Con report from last week, thanks to a special guest Christian Spicer at the end of the table.
Comic-Con! I think you have to sing it.
Do you?
I think so.
And, of course, the triumphant return of Jeff Cannata, who was also at Comic-Con.
Yes! Thanks for having me back, guys.
thanks for being back!
So that's, of course...
By the way, you gotta throw the catch.
I was just going to say, that's of course... With two N's and one T.
Nice. Of course.
Yeah. And I'm actually going to start a new one. I'm going to start a new one, guys. Get ready for this one.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to try to get people to get on board.
With?
With board games.
Oh.
Get on board.
Get on board.
It's a movement. It's a movement.
Like you to get on board with board games. Lovely. And also coming up today, Indie Jeff is here.
Yes!
Hey, what's up, everybody?
However, due to... irregularities, which we're going to take some medicine to try and solve.
Yes, of course.
We weren't able to do a assignment ahead of time, so he's going to be doing some indie stuff, but we still are on this plan of having an indie assignment prior to the arrival of...
Yes, there will be homework and a test later.
I just picture Indie Jeff showing up with like a fedora on and maybe like a flannel.
Dun,
and like
dun, dun, dun.
Start whipping everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. We should do drop-ins whenever it's Indie Jeff is here. Dun, 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 dun. It's just just that much of it.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Just to tease. Yeah.
And just to tease a little bit, I actually have an indie-themed indie.
What?
Hello.
That's too
so
indie.
We'll talk about that.
That's way too inside
indeed.
Baseball.
Indeed.
Hey, also, we have great games to talk about this week. Jeff's dying to talk about Bastion, and who are we to tell him that we can't? So we'll talk about Bastion some, and actually we're going to put it at the end of one of the segments because we want to do a little Bastion spoilering because the ending of Bastion is excellent and we want to talk about it. And also we have some NCAA football. We have Christian with a whole buffet plate of little bites of different games to talk about. So we got plenty
some
to
tapas.
Do there.
Some game tapas.
Some game tapas. And then Indie Jeff is also holding down the news today. So we have got the whole thing strewn out in front of us.
He literally put his hand on the news when you said he's holding down the news. He goes, I am, and then
got it,
over.
Holding down the news.
Just wanted to make sure Christian didn't take it.
I can tell you, actually, you guys, you might not be, we really don't want a soundboard, I don't think. Because,
no.
Because, you know,
kind
so,
of.
No, you really don't. It's really a distraction. As someone who's listened to a lot of sports
oh,
radio.
Oh, I know. It's terrible, but it's fun when you're doing it.
I don't know.
When you're the soundboard guy, and you're like, oh, I have the perfect sound for that.
Yeah, always.
Exactly.
It's awful to listen to. It's not fun.
But it becomes, it starts to take over, you know? It becomes,
oh, yeah.
it becomes an obsession with the show. So, like, for instance, Rome used to do, like, back in the day, Rome had one, and he would, like, do all these drops. And then it was the people would call in, they'd be like, can you give me this drop, give me that drop, and it just became a big distraction. And I'm doing this thing now, like, with Petros and Money, and they have, and it's cool, like, the board now is, like, literally, like, the size of your iPad, because it's all digital, right?
Yeah, right.
And it seems to me, even watching them, I mean, it's fun. It's a silly sports radio show. But you really get distracted with all of the, like, button punching. Like, oh, I said a catchphrase. My wife. You're like, okay. Like every time?
Is there a sexual innuendo button you can just push? And it's like, I couldn't even come up with one.
Dude, can you imagine how drunk we could get people? Have you guys read the ever-increasing rules of the Weekend Confirmed drinking game on Gaff? I'm worried.
It's in Indie Jeff segment.
It's a recipe for alcohol poisoning.
I say I'm pretty worried for some of our listeners, yeah. Folks. You might want to keep 911 handy when you're listening to the show. If you're playing along with the show. By the way, we do not condone alcohol use, especially minors. Like, so, but that having been said, I did actually toy with the idea of starting the show off today with just like going down the list, bang, 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 bang.
Oh,
but then I figured, hell, half the listeners would be passed out before the first 30 minutes, so why should we do that?
You have a really short show that way.
We would have a really short show that way. So is it more parties or more comic books or more video games or what is what is the big deal at Comic-Con?
All of the above. It's not the biggest video game show.
No.
To be honest. There are video games there and present. It's not a big video game news show or, you know, for revealing things or announcing things. Although Star Wars The Old Republic had a pretty significant announcement about their pre-order stuff that happened during Comic-Con.
Okay, that sailed past me. What was that?
That pre-orders were up and that they were being... Going crazy and being done in a very specific way to ensure pre-orders are important. And that not only are you pre-ordering the game, but you're pre-ordering the game in a specific order, and those people will have access to the game earlier, and in the order that you do the pre-order, it's all very...
It incentivizes early pre-orders, though, which is smart, because otherwise it's like, why pre-order... Well, smart from a business perspective. Like, why pre-order now versus waiting until the day before for a digital, you know, digitally distributed game? But this way, it's like, it adds, like, nerd cred. It's like, I'm going to be the first one to get it. I pre-ordered first, and it lets them have your money longer.
Well,
and
showing those early numbers to investors is probably really...
Let's swerve into the Old Republic for a brief diversionary moment. We really, we being gamers, really want that to be successful, don't we? But doesn't it seem like there's
also...
We being
also gamers and we being Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
The man in the R2-D2 shirt.
I am actually wearing an R2-D2 shirt. Yes.
It's an interesting study to me of how willing we are to... really hope for something, right?
It's a new hope that we're
but it's from a good pedigree, too. It's not as if everybody... Like, when Star Wars Galaxies came out, I think people wanted that to be successful, but at the same time were a little reserved. But this has, you know, the lineage for... How long have you wanted Old Republic 3 or Knights of the Old Republic 3? And now it's like...
See, you're buying it from the single-player perspective, right? Is that what you're saying? That's where the lineage is, because...
Right.
Not from the MMO side.
Correct.
Right. I mean, this is their first foray into that world, and... I think that sort of the, you know, the interesting part of it is that they're approaching it with a single player tilt and building an MMO. Therein also lies the risk, however.
Well, from their perspective, that's the promise. The promise is the best of both worlds. And from your saying,
well,
it could be the worst of both
worlds.
That's
become the pitch. See, right. I'm concerned that over a couple of years of watching this game, that the pitch morphed from we're going to build a badass Star Wars MMO with a good story to we're building Knights of the Old Republic 3. We're just calling it an MMO.
Well, it's certainly not that. It certainly is an MMO.
It absolutely is an MMO.
Yeah, and I mean, it's very much in the World of Warcraft vein.
Have you seen those cutscenes, though? Ooh. So awesome.
Oh, you mean the pre-rendered
cinematic
stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's not the game.
So before we just wind up talking only about that game, I guess the fundamental question I have at this point in time, and obviously people are lining up to get into it, is will it be able to avoid the trap, which I think ultimately is the big trap to a Star Wars MMO, of making everything that was awesome and epic about Star Wars mundane and repetitive and pedestrian?
Well, that remains to be seen. I don't have an answer for that yet. I think we'll see that after launch. Certainly, if you're the kind of gamer that thinks that playing an MMO is boring and mundane and repetitive, then I would say you're in danger of that making Star Wars that for you. But if you're the kind of gamer that loves MMOs and loves grinding and loves leveling up all kinds of different characters and exploring that world, then maybe it's all the better for you that it's in the Star Wars universe. I mean, certainly the stuff that they showed at Comic-Con was pretty interesting in that they showed new high-level vehicles, which is really cool, very Star Wars-y vehicles.
Well, I do like the idea of the vehicles.
Land speeders and all, you know, everything you would expect to see in a Star Wars game. And they announced that at level cap, there is an entire planet of story-driven content that is just for endgame people. So, I think... My concern, at least in the lead up and what we've seen thus far, has been that there'll be a lot of wonderful stuff to do as you're leveling in all these different, you know, they're championing this idea that, you know, faction to faction, you have no repeated quests, and class to class, you're going to have your own scrawl to start the game, and you're going to have all these interesting story things to do. And they kept saying, well, you know, when you're going to want to play different classes, and there's all these different story points that are happening. And I kept thinking, oh, no. It's all about leveling up, and there's not going to be any reward at endgame. So it's encouraging to see that they have that endgame planet. Hopefully there's enough there to keep people interested.
We talked about World of Warcraft, and I'd say more than any other MMO I've watched in the last couple of years, these guys have read from both books extensively, both the Blizzard this is what makes World of Warcraft book, and the player base, this is what we like about it, but this is what we really wish they'd tweak. And I think that they very much tried to bring those two pieces together in making this and keep it authentic to Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
Because both are very lore-driven. I mean, honestly, World of Warcraft is a very heavily lore-driven world, despite the fact that it's built around a real-time strategy game and an MMO. There's really, right. I mean, would that we ever had Warcraft Adventures?
Yeah.
We all really wanted that. Remember back in the day when they were going to make that game, we were all excited about it. We're like, oh, this is going to be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I think that, now there's an interesting question. Is the time right and the window correct for them to actually consider coming back and doing a World of Warcraft action adventure game?
I don't know. I mean, I remember at least what I had seen from Warcraft Adventures at the time led me to believe that it's very
different era. Like,
different
it would have
era.
To be like.
But I was thinking,
it's been long enough; they could do a new game.
It
now,
could almost
though.
Be an iPad game now.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Not that I don't know if Blizzard is interested in that, but it could be.
I like that idea.
Yeah,
I like that idea. All right, so swerving back down to San Diego.
Yeah.
What else
so
is going on
anyway,
there?
Christian,
I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's become less fun, though, and more business, I think, over the years as the con progresses. I think for people that aren't familiar with it, think of Comic-Con as there's a show floor where half of it is big studios and big companies and doing freebies and signings and all that stuff, and then half of it is cool comic book vendors and displays and artists and stuff like that, and you get to see all of that. And then there's a whole separate part of the con that's essentially a press junket that the public gets to go to. There's behind closed doors press interviews, but then like the big panels for the movies, it's basically a press junket style thing where they're coming out more and more now, I feel like, with a pre-thought message, this is what we're going to say. This is our movie. This is what we're going to say. And less of that fun freewheeling off the cuff stuff you used to get from some of the bigger groups that would show up. And like the question time is smaller and smaller for the big panels. And it's a shame because there's a lot of really fun, smaller stuff that I feel like people miss, because if you're a fan of comic books, you might want to go to the Marvel panel where there's going to be awesome announcements and stuff like that. But at the same time, you can go meet Chris Hemsworth. And unfortunately, you know, the big comic fan still wants to do that too. And so you have this, I think you were saying earlier, it's like 12 different cons and trying to decide.
Yeah, you're always going to miss 90% of what's happening at Comic-Con. There's really no way to do even a fraction of what you may want to do. So you really have to pick and choose what you want, because unfortunately, especially if you're interested in the really popular stuff,
you're in line.
You're going to be spending most of your day waiting for that popular stuff.
Dude, some of those lines were amazing.
How was Game of Thrones stuff?
You know, I waited 4 hours to get into the Game of Thrones panel and did not get in.
Whoa. So you, after wasting 4 hours, didn't even get to get in.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. They don't clear the room like some cons or some conventions will, where if you get there in the morning and line up, let's say you want to see the Game of Thrones panel, some fans will get there at, 7 a.m. or whatever and get in line.
And sit through two panels.
Six panels.
And they're all kind of good, but it's not what you want. But
you can just stake. Yeah, you can just stake your claim in a room and be there all day. I mean, that's what we did on Friday. We just went into Hall H. Hall H is the largest of the venues. It's about 6,000 or 7,000 people.
It's big.
And that's usually where the biggest marquee movie stuff is shown. And so at about 4 o'clock, they were showing Amazing Spider-Man, and we knew that would be a hot ticket. So we spent the entire day in Hall H.
Dude, one, your TRS panel was super cool.
Thank you. And thanks for coming. I appreciate it. Christian came up and asked a question.
I crashed your panel.
You did.
But no, it was a really great panel. If you haven't watched it, I think all the stuff is up now, right, on TRS? All the live things?
Almost all of it. Not the big thing at the end.
Which is awesome. Yeah. But I think going to these panels or staking your claim, you're allowed in and out privileges also, which is interesting. Oh, what I wanted to ask is, you haven't talked about Ghost Rider yet.
Yeah, Ghost Rider was crazy. It's the Crank guys, the two directors of Crank, Mark and Brian.
I think it's an unexpected upgrade. I had such low expectations. It's like Nick Cage again, Ghost Rider again. But in terms of things that surprised me the most coming out of the con, it really surprised me. I have hope for it, which I didn't before.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, at the very least, it'll be bizarre.
I'm flabbergasted.
I'm completely flabbergasted.
Really? Ghost Rider 2?
Yeah.
Well, it's not really.
It's not really. It's more of almost a reboot, but with the same actor playing Ghost,
which
Rider.
Is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff.
Ghost Rewriter.
What Nick Cage movie would you least like to see a sequel of other than National Treasure?
There's like
the
12.
Wicker Man, perhaps.
Okay, all right, yes.
Drive Angry.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, I'm scared that you found something other than Ghost Rider. Yeah.
Has anybody here seen the Bad Lieutenant remake that he did? Because that if was, you don't, what? Rent it immediately.
Really?
Rent it immediately. You will thank me later. I'm serious.
For comedic value.
Bad
right?
Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Nice.
Rent it immediately.
Okay.
Hope it's on Netflix. Watch instantly.
Instantly?
Instantly. Anyway, lots of fun movie stuff. You want to hit on a couple things right
sure.
off the top. Prometheus, the movie that started out as an Aliens prequel that Ridley Scott is directing. Yeah. First science fiction film that Ridley Scott has directed since Blade Runner. So big deal.
Yeah.
It looks amazing, dude. It really does.
I'm turned off by the implications of the fiction and the application to the Aliens world.
Well, it's not anymore. It's a new IP now.
Oh, so yeah. They ditched
it
that.
It started out as an alien.
Oh, because they said... Originally they were going to like totally bastardize the whole idea of the aliens and some super race. And I was like,
yeah,
guys.
No, it's no longer tied to aliens. Although Scott says that at the end of the movie, you will see sort of the DNA of aliens. He's saying it metaphorically. You will see the sort of like where it would have connected if we had decided to go that way. You kind of see why that it started
the
this
aliens
way.
Are there to wipe out their mistakes of the gods and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
I don't know. It looks really cool, man. It
okay.
does.
And so they showed a trailer.
They showed more than a trailer. I mean, Ridley Scott was live via satellite from Iceland, and they had a whole discussion with him, and they showed footage, and they showed concept art, and it
which is how panels amazing. Should be, because I went to, and I guess it's working because I'm talking about it, Snow White, and star-studded cast, and, you know, they're going all out with this, and it's like a darker reimagined. It's Chris Hemsworth.
Yet another mention. You are just enamored with him, aren't you?
He's not as tall as you would think, but he is as gorgeous.
wow.
Charlize Theron, Kristen Stewart, and, I'm sorry, some other guy. Who plays the prince? He was in Pirates 3.
All the
right, you had me at Charlize Theron.
All the dwarves. She's in Prometheus as well. All the dwarves
sold
are like the coolest dudes in the whole world. It's
people you've seen
Ray
from like
Winstone
Snatch and all these awesome,
all these badass guys.
But they showed up with this awesome panel. The four stars are there and nothing to show because the movie comes out June 1. This is like kind of what Comic-Con represents. Like, oh crap, we got to get our message out to our core or whatever.
Right.
And they sit there and, like, they haven't started filming. They literally took pictures in costume, 2 days before. So they had, like, one still image of each person. And then the director, whose name is escaping me, he did the Black Ops ad with Kobe Bryant and stuff like that. And he did, well, I think,
Halo
ODST.
Yeah.
And so they showed all his video game ads on the big screen, which is kind of cool. But it's like, this is a Snow White panel. And it was just, it kind of fell flat, unfortunately, but they wanted to have a panel. It's like, oh shit, it's Comic-Con, we gotta have something, but they had nothing.
Then they gave everyone an apple stuffed with roofies, and that was
that was the end. Yeah.
Promotional. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's so much we could talk
all right,
about.
So move us, so those panels, move us out to the show floor. Would you walk around the show floor? What are some of the cool stuff you saw and checked out?
Everything that I've ever wanted
anything?
To buy. Yeah, I mean,
what did you buy?
I bought some magic cards.
You are on the magic
Hot
tip
dang,
now.
I am. I'm hooked. And I almost bought this one of a kind leather handmade Captain America vest. I hope you saw my tweet about it because it was.
Is that the photo?
Yeah,
that was pretty awesome.
It was
awesome.
A good one.
Yeah.
That was pretty
so
awesome.
What prevented you from taking this
the
bad boy home?
$345 that it cost.
Well,
and the fact that when would I ever wear that other than at home to sleep in every night?
Well,
Halloween.
I think you could wear it. I think you could have worn it on your show and had it as a write off.
Yeah,
that's costuming.
Probably.
It's costuming, I mean, right there.
Where are you? You need to be my financial advisor, Garnet.
I think the favorite thing about the show floor, aside from the big things and the spectacles, is meeting some of the artists. And then I love watching like celebrities or A-list talent that are actually nerds or like Paul Scheer's walking around the show floor and seeing an artist he knows and being like, oh, it's, Mark Winslow or whomever,
sure.
right? And like running over and being excited about that. And to me, that's super cool because it's like he's at Comic-Con for the right reason. Yeah, he had his project, which like NTSTSVUSD, which looks hysterical. It's a kind
of naming off letters of the
alphabet. That's what it is.
Yeah,
it's,
that's the whole thing. It's
like a make fun of CSI in 24. And it looks really fun. But he's there as a fan, too. And then you have people like Bob Stencil, who's like a Comic-Con character, walking the floor and interacting with people. And it's you can spend a whole day there just wandering around. It's an event in itself. It's fun.
Yeah. There's tons to do everywhere. everywhere. And but there's crowds everywhere too. So it's
it'll take a day literally, because you're like, walk a little, stop a little. Yeah.
And you know, just people dressed up as fun stuff, and so what, and there's lots of there was lots of video games there you could walk up and play. As you said, there's the E3 builds of stuff. SSX was there.
So did you play some SSX?
I didn't. I mean, we literally don't have time. I played it, all the stuff we saw at E3 was there, so it was like, you know, I'm not gonna.
They had a Riddler challenge map that was playable.
From Batman Arkham City?
From Arkham City. That was
so
cool.
Have you checked out Batman Arkham City before?
Yes.
Okay, so this is just the Riddler map. And tell me about what was the Riddler map you played?
Well, so apparently the demo was the same one from E3, and apparently the Riddler map was in that demo.
Yeah. Oh, so I know it. I played it then, yeah.
Okay, but yeah, the rep there said, because I didn't read anything about it, I didn't get to it. And she was like, yeah, no one really found it. It was there and available, but they didn't direct you to it.
You had to actually go. It's actually one of the parts of that demo area from E3 that highlights how the open world part of the game works.
Right.
And they weren't emphasizing that because there were so many points they wanted to hit. And that's one of the big questions people have had, is how open worldy is it? And the answer is it's very open world. Yeah. You have a lot of room to go and do random side quests, which ties into the Riddler stuff. So how was your experience with it? Did you go through all of the progression steps to get to the room, or did they have the room where you could just go to it?
No, it was 2 Riddler trophies were required to get to the room, to unlock the room, and then find the room on the map. And I did that. That was fairly easy. It's kind of fun, but it's similar to the Riddler trophies from Arkham Asylum. If you have a clue or a location and you examine it, and you go in detective mode and you see how to manipulate the environment to go and get it.
Yep.
And then it opens
Except
up.
That these are side missions now within the larger scale of the city.
Right.
So it
it's like an orb.
It gets you traversing the city. And I think that one of the things that's cool about the potential for this is it's a good way for them to pull players back out of the storyline and get you just fooling around in the city, which they've built, which is cool and you can do now because, you know, that's different. The first game had areas in which you could explore, but it was still a progression of spaces.
Right. And you have more of the tech available to you right at the beginning of the game. And so a lot of the Riddler challenges are tech dependent. So you have to use your, you know, flyable Batarang to grab one or whatever.
Map they showed, which they said was a medium level difficulty, so kind of in the middle of the game, used a lot of tech. I mean, you used your zip line, your regular Batarang, your guided Batarang, your explosive gel. And it was cool, but the thing that disappointed me about it, I guess, is that finding the Riddler icons or whatever in Arkham Asylum required problem solving and actually solving a clue, and it was like Riddler. This challenge map was more – it's funny because it's another game I played around with, but it felt almost kind of like Catherine. Where it's a puzzle. I mean, it's not challenging mind at all. Right.
They're very
it's
physical.
Environmental hazards that you're outrunning and then you're doing stuff.
You know, it could be just this one.
Right.
It could
be just this one. There's a whole.
So you gather up all the clues, you get to the room, and how'd you find the room? Did you make it through that okay?
Yeah, I got lucky. The second, what are they called? The Riddler gems? What are they called? I'm forgetting the things you collect.
The little question marks.
Yeah,
trophies.
The Riddler trophies.
Yes.
The second one I got to needed to unlock the room, it then marks it on your mini map where the room is, and I was literally right next to it.
All right.
Which is where I got my second trophy. So I was like, oh, it's here. And then I was already in detective mode.
Is it the one that was electrical inside? And then there's a series of
blades that come out.
Blades and
fire. So you're in like this danger room, the floor of which has electrical panels that crackle with electricity to electrocute you.
Yeah.
And you have to use your Batarang to turn off the electricity and then avoid a series of rotating blades that come at you.
Before the electricity turns back on.
And make it through a number of it's like an obstacle course thing.
Yeah, but actually, I don't know if you saw this, but when we were seeing it at E3, we did it the sort of straightforward way of dealing with all the obstacles. But then the developer took the controller and showed us there's an alternate way where you don't even have – you can sidestep all that stuff.
Really?
And you use your tech to just
– It's like the zip and the
– Yeah.
Like the hook and the zip or whatever.
And it was one of the coolest things I have seen was – ziplining across and grabbing that guy as he's like suspended.
Yeah.
The Riddler has tied him up and suspended him from the ceiling. And you zipline across and grab him with your arm. And it looks so physical that Batman slams into him and just grabs him onto his shoulder as he's swinging through the environment. So awesome. And he didn't have to turn off anything, didn't have to do anything. I hope there's more of that.
Because that was one of my favorite things about Portal 2. Fan videos were like the creative ways to use the companion cube and do that kind of stuff, and that'd be awesome to see that in Arkham City, where you can, you know, explore and get creative and mess around
multiple ways to approach
did you check out any other comic themed video game stuff? There's Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom.
I'm not going to take that troll bait. I'm so sick.
Not troll. You said you wanted to be pissed about it. I'm offering you your rope.
It hurt. Yeah, I will hang myself. Jeff, will you burn it later? My rope?
I will definitely burn your rope later.
I'll cut the rope.
Okay.
There we go.
It
sounds like you guys are going to have a regular circle jerk.
Where's the jar? Where's the money jar?
What?
Oh, yeah, we need that, huh?
I think Zav was going to bring that.
Oh, yeah, what a jerk. There's a lot to like. 12 new characters, like 8 new stages, and the characters look, you know, fully developed and stuff like that. What irked me is, one, this has been less than a year, and that's annoying. Two, they've given 2 different reasons for why it's not DLC.
All right, so what are those reasons?
Well, so the one was that it's kind of similar to Super Street Fighter 4. Like, it's such a large thing that this, you know, couldn't be a simple add-on or whatever. And I kind of don't really buy that. But then the other one, they played...
The money!
Well, yeah,
the second one is the money!
Well, the second one is that originally it was all planned as stage DLC, but then because... I'm going to come across like an asshole. Because of the earthquake and tsunami that devastated Japan, that I am not knocking in any way, shape, or form, it upset their DLC plans. And so because they still wanted to give this to the fans... They thought the only way to do it is as a packaged product, and hey, we're still getting it out even though we suffered this tragedy. And to me, that's like equivalent of playing a race card or something, or like saying, it's in the Bible, or this is America. Like, you can't challenge that. I can't be like, no way, that earthquake wasn't that bad, bro. Shut up. Make a deal. And it's just like, they lay that out there as a fan, and you're just, you can't argue with that as much as I want to.
Well, I guess the only... You know, the redeeming factor of this maybe is that they have set the precedent that these ultimate versions are less expensive than $60. So they haven't announced yet, have they?
But it's $39.
It's going to be $39 product, right? So some silver lining there, maybe.
Wait a year. Wait a year. I don't know. Just give me 12 months with the original. It's too soon.
I hear you.
Hashtag too soon.
I hear you. We're getting close to the end of the segment, so do we want to swerve into Bastion and do a little Bastion spoilering?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, so this is the last segment, last part of the segment. It's going to be about 4 minutes long, so if you want to skip ahead now, be my guest. But we're going to talk about Bastion, including the spoilers at the end.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people were upset that I mentioned the fact that the last time I was on, which was 2 weeks ago, mentioned the fact that I couldn't talk about a game because of the
embargo
is up. Yeah. And I get it. It's not fun to hear about that. But I was really bursting at the seams to talk about it because I love it so much. Honestly, I said on TRS that if Portal 2 hadn't come out this year, I think Bastion would be my game of the year up to this
point.
It is that good.
It is very good. I agree.
And I think it comes down to controls. Precision controls. Okay. And this game... really makes me feel like I am completely in the driver's seat as far as whether I'm going to be successful or unsuccessful. And I'm specifically talking about those challenge rooms. Because as much as I love the story mode and had so much fun with it, and it's so well conceived and well put together and so unique in both visual style and audio style and gameplay, I kept coming back again and again and again to those challenges because they're so... much fun. And when games tend to have stuff like that, I often don't get into it very much. And I like horde modes. I like those kinds of things, especially when they have co-op. But I tend to not do like single player.
Dude, are so different on this point.
Really? You dig that stuff?
I'm in Garnett's camp too.
No, actually. I found those weapon training rooms to be somewhat incongruous with the entire
experience
of the game.
Well, I think we're talking about two different things. You're talking about the weapon training rooms, which were the sort of puzzle elements. I'm talking about the dreams.
Oh, yeah. Those are kind of cool.
Those are very awesome.
So there's 2 pieces to this in Bastion, which is what we're talking about, downloadable game on Xbox Live Arcade right now. And they're in the main Bastion area, you eventually open these wave after wave battle tests.
Right.
Which is what Jeff's talking about. There's 3 of them. Of which I did 2 of them. And you're right. I thought those were pretty fun. There are also out in the world for each of the weapons that you gain, like firing ranges or test chambers that you go and prove your ability to use those weapons and open new add-ons for them.
They're basically puzzles.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not really that like like demanding from an action perspective, most of them.
Well, yeah, a couple of them are more action-y, but yeah, they're mostly like figure out how to do this in the fewest amount of steps, basically.
Right.
And I thought those were cool. I just liked them because they're such a change up to the main game. But it's basically like it reminded me of Puzzle Quest. You know, in Puzzle Quest, you're fighting, and then to like unlock a magic spell or something, you play a completely different kind of thing using the same parameters. Right. It's basically a little puzzle.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought those were – it's a nice change of pace. But what I'm actually talking about are those dreams.
Those dreams are very cool.
And the thing that's so great about them is you unlock these idols through the game, which allow you to modify the bad guys in various ways, making them more difficult.
One of the coolest ways to handle difficulty adjustment that I've seen in a long time. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it is absolutely – awesome that you can, you know, how you modify the enemies is interesting, first of all, because it's not just, well, they have more health and you damn it. There is some of that, but it's also like, oh, well, maybe they'll drop a little bomb when they die, or maybe they'll turn invisible for a second, or maybe.
Or they slow you down.
Yeah,
there's a number of different ways to do that.
And you can really mix and match based on what is more difficult for you or how much you want to challenge yourself.
It's like a more accessible version of like the skulls in Halo.
And more varied, I think. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Anyway, but the point I was trying to make is that the control scheme and the precision with which I felt I was able to use each of the weapons, and each of the weapons feels differently from one another, and how those all mesh together and finding the loadout that you want and being able to move around the environment effectively, it just all comes together in such a perfect way that it reminded me of the best games of my youth, of feeling like, yeah, when I mean, this is a stupid reference, but when I push that controller up, Pac-Man goes exactly where I need him to go. You know, it's precision. And that's how
I think that every element of Bastion shows that attention, whether it's how well they figured out handling difficulty, how well they handled, you know, I think that as well as that idle system handles difficulty, the whole liquor tonic thing handles handles a skill tree in a whole new way that I found really a good fresh take on that. And then I enjoy ranged weapons in these games as much as I enjoy melee. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was very interesting that not only do they have a variety of ranged weapons, but each of them gives me a different mechanic for how it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's one where you're stuck in place, but you have automatic fire. There's one where you can move and aim, but you don't aim and lock on near as fast, and it's as fast as you can press the button. There's one that has a very slow aiming mechanic where the aiming lines come together and allow you precision shot. And then you combine that with upgrades, and suddenly I have a number of options, which then plays back into your dream sequence. Because when I go into the dream sequence, I have to think, well, what combination of weapons, melee and range, do I really want to go play with?
Yes.
I really, really like that. So.
To the end.
Wrap, yeah.
Yeah.
The big thing about Bastion to me was that not only was it a great action RPG, but it pulled me in because the story was really, really well done. The narrator worked perfectly, and I was engaged by it all, which is, I think, why I thought those weapon training rooms were sort of a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do pull you away from that. Yeah.
And
I don't disagree with you in any way on what you said. I will say, however, the story is a little bit style over substance.
I like style.
I like style too, and I said
that might be why I like it.
I agree with you. I love the feeling of this game,
mm-hmm.
but it's, and I love the poetry of it, and the, you know, it's ambiance, you know, but it's a little. There really isn't much there story wise.
Well, right, but the tableau that they sort of lay out really, you know, ignites your imagination in terms of, you know, putting all the pieces together in your mind. Because they don't explain everything. Like, they don't explain why everything happened. And
right, because they can get away with it because it's
so stylish.
But
they set it up as sort of you guys, your society was the bad guy society trying to wipe out the other society.
Right.
But now you're maybe trying to make things better.
Yeah.
But this Bastion system could also be used just to rewind the clock. And so you're presented at the end with this question of, would we move forward?
But that
or do we go back?
That's my gripe. I felt like there's two choices you have to make, two binary choices at the end of the game. And
there's actually more than that.
There's two binary choices.
At the very end. Well, yeah. So there's
two choose A or B.
Two of those.
There's only two of those, yeah.
Well,
there's go forward or rewind
and
save or don't save.
Binary choice.
Right.
Okay, yeah, I misunderstood how you said it. Yeah.
Yeah. And in both of those situations, I felt, because I was invested in this world, I felt like it was a meaty decision and I needed to
make
the right choice.
That's a great decision.
But I had no idea what either of them meant.
Oh, well.
You know what I'm saying? Mm. And I don't think that either of them really added up to anything.
Oh,
I mean, I love that moment at the end. Don't get me wrong. I love the moment at the end. We're in spoiler town, so we can talk about it.
Yeah.
Which did you choose?
Which ending? I mean, well, actually.
Yeah, which did you choose?
Okay. I'll confess. I played the don't reset the world or don't reform the world.
I did the same.
Then I went back and reloaded and played the last level again and selected the other ending.
And how much of a difference was there?
This goes back to my point about the narrative in general is that it does a much better job of creating a feeling and a world and emotion, a certain sort of emotional palette, than it does actually conveying a, you know, A, B, C, D sort of plot point narrative.
Right.
So, yeah, at the end, it does kind of...
Doesn't really matter.
It doesn't, but
of course it matters, Jeff. It matters as much as you bought into the world. Do you care about the Bastion? Do you want to move forward? Do you want to do... It's just a matter of how much you care about the story.
Yeah, okay.
It's a matter of, obviously...
I will say the other decision, I carried the guy through.
Yeah, that was my... That
and
was my...
really... emotional, powerful, beautiful moment.
The music in that game is so brilliant. Yeah. Like the way that they switch it up too. There's instrumental stuff and then vocal tracks, and it's so good.
I agree, definitely. So we have some very good music coming up later on in this show. That would be from Sin. That's actually the Studio Owners Band. We've had them on before. They do like a very melodic sort of heavy rock sound. So I think you'll like that. You guys liked it before, so you'll probably like it again. This week we have Bloodlust from them. Also, Del Rio has a show coming up next Thursday, August 4th, at the Coyote Lounge in Panoma. So like he's out busting it loose now.
Yeah,
he's getting live shows. Live shows for Del Rio.
Oh, yeah.
Music from the studio owner. All that and more to come on Weekend Confirmed when we come back. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. The kid settled in for the rest of the show. He was looking forward to it.
He opened up his game flap, stuck a game right in it.
Well, I'm glad that we made it one segment before the return
of
the game flap. Yes,
I've been away.
You have been away.
I gotta juice the kids. What?
Whatever that means. Hello. Police are on the way.
Yes, I'm just baiting him. I want that jar full of money.
That'd be good. We'll hand it off. Would we ever decide who we're gonna give it to?
I think we said the
PAX,
maybe PAX or Child's Play or
yeah, Child's Play.
Yeah.
Okay, we do that. All right, so since you've been away, and we can throw it back to you, hopefully if you've enjoyed the Bastion stuff, there wasn't too much spoilery there, so if you want to go back, you could probably listen to a lot of it, but the last minute or so was really very spoilery. So
yeah, we did talk about the endings.
We did talk about the endings. So there's that. And this week, From Dust Hit.
Yeah.
I legendarily, on Wednesday night, after a long remote studio trip that we'll talk about next week, came home, had some dinner, and downloaded From Dust and flipped it on and then fell asleep. So
Sleepy Dust for you.
I'm hoping it's awesome. Jeff, tell me it's as awesome as I thought it was when I saw the demo of it.
Yeah, it's. I played the first five levels last night, or actually four and a half. So I quit halfway through the fifth level. Really cool. I was sort of worried, like, for the first few levels, they keep introducing these new gameplay mechanics, like, you know, different elements you can interact with and stuff like that.
Probably lay it out, because From Dust, even looking at it, people will get, like, this nebulous idea about what it's about.
It's so sad, because there used to be a day when God games were...
It's basically a game that Peter Molyneux would look at and sort of cry a little bit inside, because it's really well executed. Like... I mean,
cry a tear of joy, right?
Cry a tear of wish I was still making these kinds of games.
It's a very accessible God game. It very much reminded me of elements of Populous and Black and White.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it very much has that, but the controls are very simple. You move around with the left stick and camera with the right, and you use the triggers, and that's more or less the bulk of what you're doing.
And you use the triggers to do what?
to pick up and drop different types of matter. So either land or water or fire or, I'm sorry, magma. And they all interact.
Magma.
Oh, and then you also have a suite of powers that you unlock as you progress that allow you to do stuff like...
Sweet!
You were talking about last week with Zev. I was talking about turning the water into...
Wine.
This gelatinous...
Jello.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Because you can carve the water like you're
And
Moses.
Then Bill Cosby shows up and he's like, hey, would you?
Yeah. Got the water and the creamy Jello pudding pops.
Anyway, so yes, it's very much a... centered around this little village of people that you have, and you're trying to, in any given level, complete a certain objective, which usually involves building a certain number of cities, grabbing different artifacts that enable you to, you know, use these different powers, saving the cities from various natural disasters.
And does it
like
follow?
That.
So in the demo area, as I saw, the way this was communicated to the player was that there would be totems in the landscape, and the core challenge to the game was creating a land bridge,
such that
your tribesmen could get from wherever they started the level to that totem, and then once enough of them got to the totem, you know, they'd like do a dance around it or whatever, and then it would spring up. Like if it was a town, it would spring up in a town.
Yeah,
it was a
you don't get to just decide to make a village.
Right,
you have to. It has to be built around these.
Right, and then the village will actually continue to. Well, not the village, but the surrounding foliage and palm trees and stuff will continue to expand into areas that where the foliage can take root. So part of it's sort of like an optional thing. Like you don't have to cover the entire area with foliage or whatever or trees and stuff, but you do unlock more of the tribe's memories, which are basically these little unlockables, the more of the area you cover with this stuff.
That's pretty cool.
So it's
I've heard it gets tough. I haven't played it, but I've heard it gets tough to a point of frustration.
Okay, well,
is that where you are?
The fifth level that I ran into was the first level where it didn't feel...
You wanted to smite them?
Well, no,
It
didn't feel like a tutorial. Like, it wasn't like, okay, here's another two or three gameplay mechanics that you're going to mess around with for a bit. It was... Okay, here's an area that's quite a bit bigger than the areas you've been playing in before.
Gloves are off.
And even introducing new environmental behaviors like, the map level 5 is like this desert area, this huge desert area. It's very dry and arid. And then even when you build cities, the vegetation won't naturally sort of spread because it's so dry. Oh, I just lost my train of thought.
But
it's hard.
I watched it leave the station, too. It's pretty amazing. It's like,
I know.
just
watch the eyes go completely blank.
His vegetation didn't take hold.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So you're digging, you're carving out, like, you know, you're making bridges to get your guys to different totems and stuff.
Right.
But as you're digging through the desert, you'll unearth these springs, which will
drown your tribes people.
Yeah. So basically, the world.
That's not good.
The environment starts filling up with water, and so you're like, holy shit, I shouldn't have taken land out of here because now there's a spring that's causing this like little river to...
Your little tribes are like, oh God, why?
Yeah. So it's...
Wow. Is there any warning though when you're going to hit one of these?
Nope.
No, you just
aquifers?
It's like Minesweeper.
By the way, I got to use the word aquifer in the show.
What's an aquifer?
For pooping, stupid.
it's like a dick reference. Yeah.
Oh boy.
So it seems to be opening up quite a bit, and I can see how it might get a little frustrating if they keep ramping up the difficulty, but I'm having a blast with it so far. I haven't hit that wall.
Now I appreciate the situation that a reviewer might be in if they're, and this is a universal thing of I'm trying to get through this game so I can write a review and I'm on deadline. I get that. But other than that, if we're playing the game, and especially this sort of game where it says, okay, player, here is a world. Here's some rules with how to mess with the world. Now I'm going to give you some puzzles to play with.
That's wonderful.
Don't you want the puzzles to escalate to a point?
I hear a butt coming on.
There's a butt.
I don't have a butt, so go ahead.
How do you
sit down?
I was born without one. I'm of two minds about this game. I love God.
It's a double-edged coin.
It is indeed. I love God games. I love... Love God
games. Like God of War.
Yes. Yes. Black and White is one of my classic game I play the crap out of. Loved that game. Populous. Yes. Those I adore these types of games. And I'm glad that From Dust is bringing that genre back. And I think it does a lot of things really, really well. Unfortunately, it breaks Jeff's cardinal rule of gaming, and it often puts a giant clock up on your screen. And so the thing you just said, which is what I loved about the game.
Really disappointed me because I hadn't seen that.
Yeah. The thing that you just said that I really love is you have this world, you have this playground, you have quite literally a sandbox. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's actually a sandbox. And it's so much fun to play around in. And then it adds arbitrary stress of here comes a tsunami. It's coming really soon. Get ready for that.
Dear developer of this game, please take the clock out because I don't even want to look at it. You almost make me not want to play it.
Don't take your clock out.
No, I get it. You like it.
So, yeah, Jeff, did you break the Christian's cardinal rule of podcasting and refer to yourself in the third person?
I was talking about Jeff Mattis.
You hate clocks.
I do.
Okay.
I didn't mind. I mean, normally I don't like them. I didn't mind the way that they were implemented, at least in the first couple of levels, because, well, for example, the first time you see one is the level you guys were talking about, or we were talking about last week, Zav was mentioning, where you have a village and a tsunami's coming, and you basically have to, you know, build this wall around this one.
Well, and for that level to work, the tsunami eventually has to arrive.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And it does. And I'm sorry. This is the level after the one that Zav was talking about, because that was simply a matter of collecting an artifact, bringing it back to the village, and repelling the water. This level was there is a village totem that you have to activate, but it's in a precarious area where, you know, every 3 minutes a big tidal wave will come and sort of wash water over this granite wall. And so you basically have to make it safe so that area is protected from the periodically coming wave. So it's not like the wave comes once and it's game over. You basically just have to – you're grabbing magma and like building this wall higher and higher, and then you watch the wave come and you're like, okay, where's the water getting
through?
That's
not so bad.
But so let me finish my explanation of why this is bad, okay? Because the controls are not super precise, okay? So you have, as I said, your ticking clock of stress, which I do not enjoy, mixed with – okay, got to get this thing. Got to get the okay. Got to build it. Oh crap. Okay. Well, the sand didn't go exactly where I wanted it to go. Okay. Well, I only have 2 more minutes. Is that enough time to start doing more? I don't know. Mixed with bad pathfinding from your villagers, mixed with an unpredictable pathfinding from your villagers, mixed with not being able to control them in any way. So you can't say, go
this
way.
That's the game. That's the mechanic of the game.
Yeah. But it does give you a – every time you tell your villagers to go somewhere, it gives you a clear line as to what path they're going to take based on the terrain. And then if they can't get past a certain place, the pathway will turn red. And you know, okay, here I have to like adjust.
And they'll go, help me. Yeah. But the problem is that –
you are not a very nice spirit wind.
No, I like this game a lot. I'm just mentioning my quibbles with it.
You're a foul
wind. Qualms. It is
a mighty wind.
The physics and the implementation of the elements is so good and so realistic that oftentimes there isn't a clear indication as to whether or not your land bridge is workable for this guy, or if that little teeny tiny puddle of water is going to be a major problem for your tribesmen.
And I'm okay with not knowing that 100% every time, because the game is about, I mean, ostensibly grabbing mounds of earth or water with your hand and kind of like slapping them onto the environment.
But I wish that you said it exactly. I wish that it had been more than that. I wish what I had been able to do with the matter was more than just scoop and plop. I wish there had been more intricate, precise ways to draw, you know, because I found myself feathering the thing to try to like, because it's not clay. You're not grabbing clay and placing it down. You are, you know, soaking up sand or water or whatever thing and kind of leaking it onto the environment, and it settles and changes position. So you don't really know exactly how it's going to work, which is cool and realistic, but I wish I had more precise ways to, well, I want to kind of like drip this sand across a line, or
is it fun to replay though and experiment? I mean, it doesn't seem like it would be
without the stupid timer.
Oh, come on now. Okay, we're talking about From Dust, which is available right now on XBLA. It's a big god game where you're getting tribesmen over to building cities and getting their way, you know, trying to help them rebuild their society. It's coming out on PC, so there's a potential that if you're looking for, you know,
more precision,
it could bring that in. Although the way the PC is going to work, of course, you're going to have analog click the button, and as long as you hold it down, you're sucking up, and then as soon as you let go, it stops, and click the other button, and it lets go. Here, you know, with the triggers, you have analog control. There are challenges, Christian, actually, to address what you're talking about. There's challenge maps. You can go back.
Right.
And it's kind of like a score thing there.
Yeah, definitely. Leaderboards that hold it, the whole deal.
So, after listening to you, it seems like you're having this push-pull between enjoying the aesthetic of the game and the inspiration of the creativity that it's given you, but then you feel like you're fighting it.
Exactly. Perfectly said. I think I love it so much that I want to just have fun in this world. I want to be creative in that sandbox because it really feels like creating a sandcastle on a grand scale. You're like, yeah, I can move rivers and then there's like beautiful waterfalls and lava flowing and you really feel like, oh yeah, I can manipulate this entire world and be a god in that way. But then I'm dealing with such banal, uninteresting, you know, did the guy freaking walk over the thing wrong, or
so
where is he walking
now?
So
let me ask you a design
now?
Question. Were I to take, hypothesize here for a second, were I to take away those constraints that have been added in there, would it still be a game? In other words, is what you're looking for something that would be a great additional mode to the game that I think that would be, I mean, I agree. Like, I love in a sandbox game when I have an opportunity to go play with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that as a game, when I have all of that to play with, it very quickly, to like use the sort of same language of what we're talking about, that sand just starts to run over the surface of the world and just becomes a big puddle.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could make it score based though. So like there is a clock going, and at the end, regardless of whenever you finish, the tidal wave then comes or something like that. And if you got it done quickly, you know, you get a better score if it takes a long time. And so that gives you an incentive. And then I think you can do creative things with achievements and gamer score, where it's like get this done in under whatever the time is, 2 minutes to get this gamer score. But you can still also play and take 10 minutes if you want to have fun in the world. I think there are other options than the strict, harsh clock that so many games still use.
And maybe it's not just the clock, though. You know, we've looked at this problem in other games. Let's take a big one, for example, The Sims. The Sims was really popular. And at first, the game design was entirely what I think what you're talking about, which is like, here's your toy, go play with it and do what you want to. As the series evolved, though, they progressively came up with new ideas for using it. Now, that's much.
I think the secret to Sims success is cheat codes.
Oh,
I think if there was no infinite money cheat code in The Sims, it would not be the
you
success.
You are so
it is.
Right. Because I bet, I think most people don't play that as a starting from scratch. Here's my dude. I'm going to earn everything that I. Yeah, it's I want to make my dream house.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
And like, I think exactly. Yeah.
All right.
But I don't. I'm not against all challenge. I'm not. I don't want to come off as saying like there should be no challenge. I just feel like throwing a clock on my screen and just having a deadline is so arbitrary. It's so arbitrary.
Don't play Catherine.
Oh, God.
So From Dust, very artistically inspired, but it may drive you crazy. Also coming out on the PC, though. So if you might want to wait and see what you can get, because it is beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah, and fun, and just fun from a pure tactile.
Higher resolution monitor. It may even be more, you know, just better eye candy. You played some Catherine, but just the demo.
Yeah. I got super excited about this game, and I really wanted to play it, which is weird, too, because I wanted to play it on PS3, which I think kind of goes into what you guys have talked about in past weeks, that the PS3 has this notion for indie or, you know, more Japanese-style games. It's available on 360 and PS3, but for whatever reason.
Well, certainly for more Japanese games. I mean, obviously, given the popularity difference in Japan on the console.
Their home base. So I went to go buy it on Tuesday, and I went to my local GameStop, and they didn't have it. I guess their truck or UPS hadn't been there yet.
I'm sorry, did you pre-order it?
Yeah, no. They did ask, but they didn't have it in, which is funny. Like, have you pre-ordered it?
Would you like to pre-order Modern Warfare 3?
I was like, no, I didn't. And they're like, okay.
Do you have any games you'd like to trade in?
Yeah. I want to go to a GameStop, and I want to go and buy a game and then ask them if they want to pre-order my trade-in.
But you know what? Yeah. Don't do that, because let's not. Yeah, can we just scrub that? I don't want to give them any ideas.
No. Give me $15 now, and in the event that I decide to trade it in, I'll have interest on going on that $15.
They will probably take that idea.
I'm fine with that. So I went there. They didn't have it. Then I had Tuesday and Wednesdays were my time to go get this game and really play it. Then I went to a Best Buy on Wednesday, and the guy just looked at me and was like, what? And they didn't, which kind of struck me as odd. But then the best is I found a Blockbuster, which kudos to me.
Wasn't closed.
It was open. And, well, it's going to be very, I go, do you have Catherine in? And she goes, oh, let me check. And she checks and she goes, oh, no, that comes out August 10th.
And we'll be closed.
Well, right.
So anyway, I only got my hands on the demo, unfortunately. I was super jazzed for this game. I think it's cool, and I like games that do something different. It's like the example of this isn't a shooter. You know, it's
right.
It's not a first-person shooter. Right. For those of you that don't know, haven't been following Catherine, it's a very Japanese anime feel to it, where you have storytelling told while you're in a cafe, and it's, you know, limited interaction. You can play with your cell phone, and there's some cool morality choices that I can get to in a bit. But the meat of the game is you're climbing blocks, and it's a puzzle game where you have this, like, Freddy Krueger, like you're in a dream, but if you die in your dream, you die in real life. And so you're in this dream state, and you need to get from the bottom of these blocks up to the exit, and you have this evil woman, Catherine or whoever, chasing you, and it's a timer, so the blocks are falling off below you as you need to progress.
Breaks Jeff's rule.
Up the level. And it's difficult. I played on normal and on easy. And I think in the full release, there's even a very easy, which I didn't get to try out. But on easy, you're able to hit back on Xbox 360. Imagine it'd be select on PS3, which then, you know, moves you back one move. So it's not like necessarily turn-based, but you're pulling out blocks. You're manipulating the world by pulling out blocks. And then it kind of looks like Qbert. In terms of like the block aesthetic, and you're climbing them up and doing things as this thing's chasing you, and you have to manipulate the world and pull blocks, and you know, you can get an icon that lets you place a new block somewhere. And I really liked the puzzle element of it. It's you're thinking, it's creative, but it's stressful of the, you know, the death coming up. And I don't know what that fine line is between fun and stress. Because I think this, like From Dusk...
Well, I think it's different for different people, really, which is the challenge.
Right. And for me, I think this game is maybe going to be too stressful, but it's super cool how they handle morality. And I'll just briefly touch on that. When you're in the cafe, you're kind of between two women. You have your steady girlfriend that, you know, wants to get married, and then there's this new girl that you wake up in bed with that's like, yeah, and she's like the vixen. And you get...
of course.
Yeah. You get...
Yeah, baby.
That's what I always do. I always wake up, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that's how you wake up in the morning. You get texts on your phone, and you can have options to reply, but you can't type whatever you want. It's like, you know, you hit A, and it gives you an option. If you don't like it, you can clear it and see the new one. And usually there's like three or four options per text, and you build a reply. And then depending on how you reply, your good or bad meter is influenced one way or the other. But it's cool because it's very gray area. It's like, I think, Jeff, you were saying you like that in Dragon Age or some of the BioWare games. Mm-hmm. And it's the total opposite of like Infamous 2, a game that I love. But the morality choices are like, hi, we have a pressing question for you. Do you want to be good or do you want to be evil? I mean, it was that binary.
Save the children
or murder everyone.
Exactly. And this game's cool because you don't know. And there were times, even just in the demo, I played it. I think I played it three times through the demo. I was like, wow, that was bad. I thought that seemed like that's what I would say to my wife. Like, that was a nice thing. Apparently, I'm an asshole.
This just in.
Yeah, right. Like, you didn't know already. I think it's interesting. I don't want to put a price on a game per se, but $60 does seem expensive, perhaps, for this game. But if you like Japanese culture, certainly I think you'd enjoy it. And if you are, you know, you enjoy that stress of figuring out a puzzle like with someone with a gun to your head, I think there's a lot to like.
Does sound fun.
It's beautiful. The presentation is really cool. It mixes from, you know, anime, like hand-drawn anime, into rendered characters, and it's pretty seamless. It's cool to see that transition in the when you're in the cafe. It does a lot right.
I'm just curious you started off this conversation by saying you were really jazzed about the game.
Yeah.
And I found that to be an interesting response because I think one of the things that I sort of perceive from people who've talked about it is like they've heard the name Catherine. They've seen a couple of, you know, interesting anime styled illustrations of it. And then they don't know anything about the game. So what got you jazzed about it?
It's all the sheep, right?
It is. I'm a sheep. And it's actually the softcore.
I'm the walrus.
Yes. Yeah. I'm actually curious about
the softcore porn.
No, well, that too. Oh. But the sheep element of it.
So it's kind of saying men are sheep, and the other sheep in your dream are other men that are also after this girl or after women. Like, you have horns, and like you're trying to break free and be your own.
Okay. Path.
I think I have to play this game because of these elements. But the idea of a morality choice, story based narrative game that thrives off of a basic puzzling element is pretty bizarre.
So that's what's got me jazzed on it, because all of those elements, except for the morality thing, I think describes Portal. And so when I heard that's what got me interested in the game. And then the more I learned, I was like, well, this seems kind of weird and out of my comfort zone. But then I was like, I'm going to play it because it's out of my comfort zone.
Well, I have it on my target list to play, so I'll play more than the demo, and hopefully we'll be able to come back on it.
I like that part in Portal where you wake up with the Portal gun, you're like, yeah.
Yeah, got that Portal gun. The lady's going to dig me. I have to choose between the one behind the blue portal and the one behind the orange portal.
Yeah.
It's waiting for me at my house, Catherine, so I'm
Nice. So we'll be able to talk about it more next week.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. More Catherine talk next week if you're looking forward to that. If you're not, too bad. Let's see. Let's do some indie stuff.
Yeah. Cool.
Let's do some indie stuff.
We got a little dun, list dun, dun, here. Dun.
Yeah. Indie Jeff.
So the indie that I was talking about before is actually, it's really small. It's free. Totally worth your time. Probably take 30 minutes to play through. It's called It Belongs in an Ancient Ruin. And it's a DigiPen student project.
My little brother went there for a little bit.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. They actually, a lot of the student projects out of there are pretty fun and creative.
Portal was a student project.
Yep. Oh, Narbacular Drop. Yep.
Yep.
Yep, absolutely. So It Belongs in an Ancient Ruin is it's a 2D platformer, retro-style graphics, but basically it takes the Indiana Jones catchphrase, you know, it belongs in a museum, and sort of flips it on its head. So you're playing a little Indiana Jones-looking dude, and his whole thing is he breaks into museums and steals artifacts.
Clever.
And then returns them to the ancient ruin from whence they came.
Clever.
So
I like it.
Conceptually, it's probably one of the coolest things I've seen in a while. I mean, the execution's good. There's a lot of potential for them to really run with this idea, you know, should they decide to make an actual full-fledged product. But yeah, go check it out. I think the website is itbelongsinanancientruin.com. Free download. I think it's like really small too, like 5 or 6 megs.
Sounds fun.
Definitely, yeah, it's well worth playing. A couple other small titles. These are not free, but they're really cheap. I've been playing on Android. I've been playing Burn the Rope and Cut the Rope. And
well, you know what? We're quite familiar with Cut the Rope.
Yeah, Cut the Rope. Burn the Rope just came out fairly recently. I mean, so Cut the Rope is, if you're not familiar with it, it's a little physics-based game where you're trying to feed this little candy to a monster. And it's based on you're looking at me like that's not...
Okay. It has like spongy ropes, and then you have to like, and so the idea is that you get things swinging in the physics world, and you use a slicing motion with your finger to cut the rope and then allow it to like,
yeah,
like that, like you have to plan out the trajectory. It's one of those trajectory games.
Mm-hmm.
So that way it's you know, it's similar to the very popular Angry Birds.
Yeah, and it adds a level of difficulty because there are stars on each level that are optional to collect. And anyway, very fun.
So I'm curious how Burn works.
Burn the Rope is I just love the way that it uses the gyroscope in the phone or whatever.
Like, you say your mama jokes to it, and you go, burn, and the rope gets burned.
I suppose you could. It's not, that'd be,
don't shake your head.
No. So burn the Rope basically presents you, it's another, like, you know, tons of levels. They give you this rope pattern, and they're shaped like, you know, a ton of different things. Sometimes they're just random patterns and stuff. But basically, you touch a part of the rope on the screen, and it creates a flame. And the flame starts burning, and it always burns up. So you have to rotate your phone.
Brilliant.
To like, so you know, and you know, these are often closed patterns. So you'll start, and it'll be burning in two different directions, and you'll have to decide, okay, which flame am I going to stick with, or do I want to try? And if you know, let the flame burn up too long, and it gets to the end of the rope, it goes out. So the whole thing is like,
the goal is to burn the entire rope.
Burn the entire rope, and then they add stuff to it, like these different colored ants that crawl along the rope, and when you burn one of them, the flame changes color to them, and then that's the only way you can burn. Like, some of the rope is specific colors, so you have to have a red flame to burn the red rope and whatever. So it becomes this more of an intricate, like, okay, I got to start here, burn halfway up here, make sure I get this ant, and then flip it around so I can come back and burn the rest of this rope.
Nice.
A lot of other different bugs that add another cool element to it. But that's, I think it's, there's a free, like a light version on the Android App Store, I believe. And then,
so you can always go check it out for free.
Yeah, there's a $3, you know, ad free version, I think. So
very cool.
Definitely.
You know, on that tip, real quickly before we head out to our break, I just picked up for the iPad. Thank you very much both to the Twitter follower who recommended it and the ever ongoing NeoGAF iPhone iOS thread, Groove Coaster.
Oh.
And I played it a little bit on the way over here. I'm going to play a lot more before next week, but it's basically a music rhythm game, and the music was very cool, and it involves obviously tapping in time and doing other motions on the screen. I love these games, so I think, and I'm very optimistic about this one, both from the response and from playing the first couple of levels. So Groove Coaster, 99 cents on the iTunes store. It's like 99 cents, probably worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth it for you to stick around when we come back on the other side. So I promised college football. Talk about college football for a couple of minutes. There's a couple more games that Jeff has on his list. And then we will get into listener feedback. We've got news still to come. Right now, it's the... Do we have a new one from you, Del Rio? What is it? Good God. Oh. It's dare I say it, it's Garnet Lee's drum and bass.
Sounds epic.
Sounds like you broke Christian's rule.
So you start the game, boom. You start a track. There's nothing playing. X is the hi-hat, 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 hi-hat.
You know, I think I'd like to bring in a little bass next.
Hi-hat, hi-hat,
bass next.
Hi-hat,
hi-hat,
bass next.
Hi-hat,
hi-hat,
bass next.
Hi-hat,
hi-hat,
bass next.
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 Hi-hat,
bass next. And I can build it however I want. I can double tap the hi-hat button and it cuts out like I like drum and bass a lot. Follow me along.
Bass next.
Again, I pull my bass track again. Drum and bass. You're playing music. Changing music as I'm building
your song.
And the X, the square, the triangle, and the circle. It's not a game.
No.
No. No. No. No. No. No.
No. No.
Press the X button. Drum and bass.
The hi hat button. And
drum and bass. It's not a game. Drum and bass.
The move controller.
Drum and bass.
Dial in.
It's not a game.
That parameter to get it tweaked to just where you want.
Okay.
That was badass.
That worked out really cool. I'm very, very happy with that. Very happy with that. Del Rio, way to go. Yay.
Excellent.
Love it. That's like a lifelike talk, drum and bass, voice, crazy mix.
I like with Del, you can like say a song and he makes it happen. Then I was like, awesome guitar solo. And then I was like, amazing drum kit. And like, you just say what you want and he just makes it happen.
And a Porsche arrived at my house.
And big titty women fell out of the sky. Jay and Silent Bob started.
But I had to catch them.
Oh, that's right.
I had to.
All right. So, then, you know, I, by the way, got caught up in a little Groove Coaster during the break because that game is really good. See, it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And one of the things we thought, one of the things that Jeff noted, and I remembered I wanted to say this, is what's cool about it is a tapping game, but it's relaxed, which is a nice contrast to like a Wenden in that on this game, you tap wherever you want. It's like, yeah, it still has the taps and the holds and like different motions, but you can do them on the screen where you
especially
want to.
Especially on the iPad, because I've noticed a lot of those tapping games on the iPad, you literally have to lay it on a table
in order
to play because you can't hold it in your hand. But this game, you can hold it in
you
your
hand. You just hold it in your hand. Yeah. Yeah, it's very fun. All right, so let's rock out a couple of the games. Instead of talking a little bit about college football, this will be probably the one time we talk about it. However, I'm going to be
talking
about it more on the Petros and Money show later this afternoon.
And I think we just got comfort.
Nice.
We just got comfort. I like how you did the finger push as well.
Oh, we had to hit the soundboard.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We basically got confirmation this week that the tailgate will be back.
NFL is coming back.
NFL.
The tailgate.
Tailbake.
The tailbake will be back. That's where we like take clams and bury them in the sand. And then,
sounds delicious.
It has to return, right?
Oh, it's back. We'll bring it back. We will definitely bring it back. Also, fantasy football getting ready to get geared up. And I am excited for the NFL. And so I will not spend a tremendous amount of time on NCAA because I probably will wind up spending a lot of time talking about Madden because I'm an NFL guy.
Yeah.
And it's going to be tough because when the game comes out, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether they have the day one roster patch ready, which I suspect they will.
Because there's lots of trades happening right now, baby.
Oh, my gosh. It's insane.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, my Cowboys, obviously, the final collective bargaining agreement that they arrived at really, obviously, the salary cap hit us pretty hard.
Yeah.
We had lost a lot of folks. But I have some Bears fans, friends. I hope that I genuinely hope that Roy Williams plays better for you than he did for the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm going to say. He's reunited with Mike Martz and his old receivers coach. But that's way too much detail for sports already. Mm-hmm. So about NCAA. So it's interesting because I think they've always faced this challenge with college football being the it's not Madden, but I get to play it in July football game for a lot of people. There are a number of college fans, so I'm not disparaging you. It has over the last, especially 2 years ago, they made a big emphasis on, you know what, we're going down our own code baseline. We're not going to be using just last year's Madden engine. We're going to be very much focused on the college game. And those roots still
really are shown in the game, in that it it very much reflects the wide open and variety of sets and more experimental plays that you see a lot of times in college football. It also very much models the inconsistency from position to position, player to player of college ball. So in this game, very much a second string wide receiver, or even especially a third string wide receiver, is very apt to not make a catch, not because the ball didn't get to them, but because it hit them in the hands and they dropped it, which is fine. I mean, that's actually part of the college game. It's equally likely that a cornerback will try a bump and run coverage and stumble after the bump, and your wide receiver will run past him and be wide open running down the field, which you won't see in the pro game and you won't see in Madden. So it has that element
now,
to it.
Now, so those both sound like realistic elements.
They are.
But is that fun?
I think it is. Actually, like, that side of what they do to make it collegiate, right, I think works because it reflects the collegiate game.
Okay. And, so, but it's something you'll definitely appreciate as a fan of college ball.
And not, I mean, like, you'll, frustrating that you can't control it.
Yes. And maybe one of the things that factors in here is that as a sports game media person, since the day I showed up at Ziff, I've always been one of the guys who was always going to get handed all the sports games. So I've been playing NCAA for years and years and years, even in a professional capacity. So I'm accustomed to that, and I sort of get where they're coming from. And I think that for the college fan, they'd be really into that. For the more casual person playing football, I think they wouldn't like that much. But I do notice that when you turn down difficulty levels, that goes away very quickly.
Right.
So, I mean, I go in right away, and I don't turn it up to Heisman, but I immediately turn it up to All-American. Because I just find that at varsity, which is like their standard normal difficulty, that the game has too many, it assists too much.
Yeah. You know, well, if you're familiar with the team, knowing who's good and who's bad and what they're prone to do, like, that probably doesn't create an issue there for people playing.
College rosters change a lot, but you can easily go in and look at this, look at all, because obviously it's a stat-driven game.
Sure.
You can go in and look at all the stats for all your players and know, oh, this is my possession guy, this is my speed guy, I know how to use these players.
Right.
The problem I have with this game is that it has not taken it upon itself to improve upon any of the on-the-field pieces that have been broken for the longest time. And the biggest one I want to point to is one of the most annoying, which is the damn way that the defensive secondary plays in both Madden and NCAA for the past 3 or 4 years, where these guys who are 3 yards off the line of scrimmage to 10 yards off the line of scrimmage make ridiculously, miraculous, amazing moves to deflect, stop, and even intercept passes that they have no business making. You know, if you watched football at all, you know that if you're throwing a 15-yard pattern that a guy 3 yards off the line of scrimmage is at the wrong spot in the arc of a football throw to be able to make any sort of play on the ball, much less turn around, leap backwards without ever looking, and knock the ball out of the sky, much less turn around without looking, leap, and intercept the ball. So you quite often you're looking at a play and you're saying, you're making your reads. You come up to, and it's obviously same as Madden. It's important you read the defense and like have an idea of what's going to happen. Like, oh, okay, if the linebacker's in a zone, I know that I got probably this play I want to do. If the linebacker's blitzing, then I know I got to get rid of the ball. If the linebacker's playing man on the tight end, then I know I want to play in this play. So you look at all those things. You drop back into pass. You're looking at where you should have a throwing lane, and suddenly, though you look golden down the field, this guy makes this ridiculous circus play underneath. And it's not just once or twice. It's all the time.
No.
It happens all the time. Over and over and over and over and over. Over and over and over and over. Guy, or another one, this one's really fun, is cornerbacks don't need to look for the ball because evidently they have eyes in the back of their heads. So you have a wide receiver who beats a cornerback down the field. And despite the fact that your wide receiver has got like 2 steps on him and the cornerback hasn't remotely turned to look, the cornerback will 9 times out of 10 make an amazing play on the ball without ever looking. You're like, wait,
no,
my guy beat you. That's the play I want in man. I have you in man coverage. My receiver beat you in man coverage. Now, yeah, okay. Every so often, the quarterback might make a bad throw, or the cornerback might wake up and turn his head. But a majority of the time, you would think at least there ought to be a chance for my guy to make a play on the ball.
And that's the biggest cardinal sin for sports games is when it feels unfair when you're playing it against the AI. Like, if it doesn't feel fair, then you're like, why am I even playing?
Well, it's like the AI doesn't know which way the character's facing. They need to what was it? Cone vision was in Madden 98 or Madden
– passing.
For passing. They need to implement that
was kind
that
of a cool idea.
Into the AI. So,
yeah, you would think
I
so.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like they don't have that in
right,
there.
Yeah.
Where you can just turn on a dime.
That's interesting. Maybe that is the problem is that the player – As far as the computer is concerned, the player is in that position, and so he has awareness of the ball. Whereas the animation you're seeing on the field is become of a high enough fidelity, you can tell, hey, the guy's helmet is pointing the other direction. He's running away from me. He hasn't looked. And it's weird because the game approaches that video level of watching a football game close enough that you notice, oh, that guy hasn't looked back. I'm going to throw it over his head.
So does this do enough? Because the last one I really played was, I think, 10. And that was the one – it made some pretty big breakthroughs in the college game and made it more college-like. And I've heard that this one is kind of – I'm not asking for a review by any means, but I've heard this one is kind of disappointing.
You mean as far as advance? It's iterative. It's okay. Very iterative. You know what? Especially in a world of build your own – in a world of build your own rosters and college football where, of course, you know – there's no name guys because right. That's outside the bounds of the NCAA rules. It would be a tough call for me to buy this one. It would be a really tough call for me to buy this one. And another frustration I have, which I expressed on Twitter already, and I want to explain a little bit because people were questioning about it, is that it frustrates me to no end as a person who enjoys these games that I can't go in anymore, pick my team, and just play the freaking season. If I want to play the freaking season, I have to go through their dynasty mode and – here's my complaint with that. Yes, I can set it up. But if I want to go play my Texas Tech Red Raiders and just run this season, I have to go into dynasty mode. I have to set it to where I'm playing head coach, not coordinator. I have to set it to where it's the right number of star levels so that I can access Texas Tech as a team.
And not get caught for NCAA violations.
Then I have to go in and set myself up as the coach of Texas Tech, arrange the conference the way I want it, set all of the other dynasty elements to sim, and now I can play my season. Except now every time I play a game, I have to wait for the machine to sim all these other elements that, frankly, I don't give a damn about. I'm not interested in recruiting. I'm not interested in going through pages and pages of, well, here's all the recruits you could get next, because I don't want to play next year. I just want to play this season. I'm interested in the season. I want to play with the kids they have this year. I just want to go do that. I don't need all the extra stuff. And if you're thinking like, well, that doesn't really sound that big deal. Actually, it takes a lot of time. Like, I want to finish a game, see something cool about it, and go on to the next game. It takes several minutes. Like, I would say it probably takes 3 to 5 minutes to sim out all of the other pieces, because the computer's doing a lot of work, because in their defense, they've built a very complex dynasty system that if you're into doing all of those collegiate level recruiting things, I'm sure is really cool. But if you're into that, God bless you.
Yeah, to your point, in this day and age, there's no fucking reason why you don't have a season.
Just a simple season mode. Just throw me a freaking season. How tough is that? And then it's weird because like the dynasty mode's so detailed. I started one off just on the basic settings, and the basic settings is that you'd start off as a coordinator. You could pick offense or defense, and then you play like at a basic school. So right now I'm near the end of the season with my Western Michigan
nice.
Broncos as the offensive coordinator. Quarterback's tearing it up. Running game, not so good. Not
so you set the plays and... I mean, how do you play offensive coordinator?
So as offensive coordinator, you play only on the offensive plays.
Oh, I
so
see.
So you're playing, you're in control of the game.
Oh, you control the game.
On the offensive side of the ball. And then,
you play as the quarterback.
You can sim it out. You can tell it to sim out and just pick. So you could,
just
if you wanted to,
plays.
You could pick the, and then it's also annoying because if you're really into playing these modes, you probably want to play several years of these seasons. And they've added this ability where you can super sim it online, which is an option you would have to buy. Because that's an extra power-up for the game. You can also buy power-ups for your coaching and your season, and then you're back into like microtransacting the hell out of this game that has all these complex levels in it. Like, whatever.
Can I pitch a game idea to you guys?
Batter up!
This is the game that I would like to see, and I think it also solves the, hey, nobody has the NFL license but EA, right? Why doesn't somebody make...
Cyberball.
Mutant League Football.
A football game that is a story-based, basically role-playing game, where, and maybe this is because I talked about Puzzle Quest in the last segment, kind of Puzzle Quest on the brain, but it's basically Puzzle Quest. It's basically a story-based role-playing game where the fighting system is football games. You could even get the Friday Night Lights license.
Where the fighting?
I want it.
Clear Eyes, Full Hearts. And you could do like basically like a season or even multiple seasons of this story of this team, and each fight that you get into in role playing parlance is basically a fully playable football game.
I like where you're going with this, but what sort of mechanically would surround the when you're not fight, you know, when you're not at the next big game, what are you doing?
I think that there's role playing set. It's the equivalent of walking around the town and talking to the townspeople. You know, in a role playing game, it's right. Like you got to buy equipment for your guys, suit them up, maybe. I don't know.
Or no,
I'm just spitballing here.
Our linebacker got drunk and thrown in the tank last night. We got to go get him out of jail.
Yeah.
I think the problem with that type
Tim
of game.
Get Riggins back on the field, baby.
Yeah, we do. Oh my god.
You should talk to the game dev story guys because I think you could build it like an iOS, you know, level game. But I don't think you could build a big game.
I don't know if the people that like RPGs and the internet might get mad at me for saying this. The people that would like the RPG element are also football fans, and vice versa.
Well, do you think the people that like RPGs are big Bejeweled fans?
Yes.
Really?
I do. Everybody likes Bejeweled.
everybody
likes Bejeweled.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, those casual stuff made it into World of Warcraft, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
It's an interesting idea, but I don't find RPGs are my favorite sort of game.
Yeah,
and I don't find the RPG hook that they're trying to throw me with this dynasty mode really catching me. Like, what I didn't tell you about is like the whole hook to this offensive coordinator job is that you sign a contract and the ESPN side of it is that Herb Street or whoever gives you all of these goals that you're supposed to make. Like, for instance, my first year, my quarterback, I get a goal. My goal was quarterback throws 7 touchdowns in the year and offense racks up over 2,000 yards of offense. And so how you do on those goals then grades you and gives you how popular you are with your team and your athletic director, mm-hmm. which then parlays into as you go through the years, do you get recruited by other schools? Do you get to move up from offensive coordinator to head coach?
Does it have any actual relevance to playing the game? Or is it just...
Well, the playing of the game drives the role-playing side.
Right.
Playing of the game, how well you do.
But it's basically just a ranking up system, right? You're just ranking higher and doing better. And it's
well,
not. There's no,
I
like,
suppose, yes.
There's no real carrot on stick.
No,
there's no, like, you'll get better armor that'll make you be able to...
No, if they wanted to be serious, actually, I just had a great thought. If they wanted to be serious about
Helm
this...
Helm of great coordination.
Sorry.
If they wanted to be serious about this whole dynasty mode thing, then they really should include a like variable scale of NCAA infractions,
yes.
that you could do to like pump up your yeah. team today and risk 5 years from now getting hit with sanctions. Now that would be, I don't understand why they haven't put
buy
that in.
Buy your key running back a new car.
Hey, or buy your
can you
buy
get
this
it away
recruit.
With it?
Have
yeah,
them
exactly.
Sell their memorabilia from past bowl games.
Because now, see, now this would be start to be interesting. You're being investigated by the NCAA
yeah.
Rules and Standards Committee.
Sorry, ooh, you have to step down.
Time to
game
go coach
over.
At Michigan.
Yeah,
right.
But then does it become Fight Night story mode at some point where you're like, I gotta fight this dude that's an ex-con? And
I guess last Fight Night kind of did do what I'm pitching.
Not that I totally dislike that, but it definitely kind of it wasn't the, you know, live the life of a boxer mode that I really hoped it would be. But.
One of the Blitzes had a little bit of that too, where it's like, do steroids, work out in the gym.
So in Blitz, that was really incongruous with what's going on. I mean, come on, Blitz is an action arcade game.
I think it'd be awesome to have a story-based role-playing experience where the fighting system is baseball or basketball or football. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. NCAA, it's a tough call this year. I mean, I don't know. If you're a college fan, you're probably going to want it. But if you're not a college fan, you might wait. Madden looks a lot different, so it's going to be interesting to see how that goes over and if they've fixed some of these play mechanics. Let's move on to some of the stuff that you guys were talking about from last week's show. Jeff, I think you'll like this one. This is from X Angel X. So it's from Archangel. He just had to put the X's in there. This was, you know, we had a big discussion. Did you listen to last week's show? Do you have a chance to listen to that?
Not yet.
Okay,
I'm excited to.
Let me quickly lay out a conversation we had. It was brought up in the discussion for the show before, an idea of whether or not Call of Duty games and online shooters need to change, or should they actually be
establishing themselves into rule sets like sports games, which is why I'm coming to this out of sports games. So when you're playing college football or any, you know, we're playing any sports game, there's a set of rules, there's a set of expectations, and so you know what the video game is going to be like. Do shooters need to move into that space? Archangel says has this to say about it. When we think back to older games, we think about mastering repetition. The real fun in the game wasn't the story, but rather how you could master the controls to get a higher score or proceed to the next level faster. Although today's technological advances have allowed us to present a compelling story, the challenge remains the same. Get better at the controls and game design to advance and take on more difficult interactions. So from a story perspective, you're overwhelming the climactic bosses, for instance. So the end usually comes right around the time you're able to orchestrate the controls in such a way that you feel like the protagonist and yourself are one. So what does that have to do to change? Well, it's this. When making a game, are we okay with you changing the story and making it as outlandish or adult or childish as you like, so long as the controls fit in with a few basic styles? After all, for gamers, the quicker we master the controls, the more fun we're having.
I think we're kind of already there with first-person shooters. When I sit down to play an FPS, I know I'm going to have my sticks, I'm going to have my triggers, and then I'm going to have a few different action items on the face buttons. It's a pretty defined rule set.
Absolutely.
And there are differences. But then to argue for why I want new control experiences, I don't want this for every game. And Jeff, you were a big fan of Heavy Rain, mm-hmm. where it's like that's, you know, we have defined...
Drink.
We have defined rules for action-adventure games already, of point and click and whatever. But I feel like a new control experience brought me into the character more. That makes sense.
Yeah. I think that was the goal with that game for sure.
Well, to talk to your first point, Christian, you made was, you know, you laid out the argument that I laid out for Shadows of the Damned.
Yeah.
Which is that by virtue of it being intelligible as a game, mm-hmm. we could go into this crazy pseudo world of the demon hunter chasing after his, you know, girlfriend. And it was like all that outlandishness, no big deal, because you had a sounding board from which to build off of. Jeff, you're big on challenge and games. What's your take on it?
It's interesting. I mean, what you just said has me thinking about a thought I just had yesterday, actually, when I was playing From Dust, a few days ago when I was playing From Dust in the tutorial mode. And it reminded me of what happens in a lot of games in the tutorial mode. Or even during the game, it'll have a moment where it'll be like, press X to do something. Press X to... grab a pail of water. And I kept thinking to myself, well, the action of pressing X, if you need to come out and tell me that I need to press X to fetch a pail of water, then the game itself in context is not suited to that action.
Well, at least it's not.
I can't.
Maybe it's just not delivering the degree of interaction you're starting to expect from the game.
Well,
from
that,
games.
That may be the case. I think if you have to have a line of text that tells me that pressing a button does something in your world that isn't readily apparent, I think that's almost becoming, as you're saying, becoming a design issue that I should be able to, in the context of this world, it should be clear to me that what I need to do,
the gamer in me agrees with you, but then I think about, you know, putting Limbo, the controller in somebody's hand and having them play Limbo with who has never played a video game before. Would they even know? I mean, is that because we have this sort of legacy of, like, you know, we've been playing, all been playing
sure,
platformers
there's a,
forever.
There's absolutely a degree
and
of
you've
that.
Got this assumed yeah. knowledge that you have. Now, on the other hand, I think a lot of these games with their tutorials are just beyond remedial, and they're not really serving the larger audience very well. In fact, that's an interesting question. Like, what games have had awesome tutorials?
Yeah, that's a great question. They're so forgettable most of the time. Yeah. And the better they are, the more forgettable they are.
Sure.
Right, yeah, exactly.
We've kind of talked about that before, about easing people into controls, especially in an age where we're just starting to expect an interactive experience. And I want to talk about that for a minute because...
Well, let me just say why I brought that up in relation to the question that you sure. asked. Because I think what you're saying is if the controls are a standard, you can get wildly disparate story
That
elements.
Is one approach. That is an, right. that is an approach.
And I think that's certainly acceptable. But I feel like the closer the marriage of controls to context, to the feeling of the world, I think... I'm almost more drawn to that approach, because it's like, oh, everything flows one from the other. You know, there's a reason that triggers look like triggers on our games, because they're mostly most often used as
a trigger. Sure.
And I think that as and I think when you bring up Heavy Rain,
drink
the idea of, you know, twisting it in a certain way because my character is twisting something in a certain way, I think that feels more contextual and appropriate.
That was definitely the idea.
Yeah.
So I think that different games obviously have different applications. I'm not going to say that one works better than the other. Shadows of the Dam, I thought, worked brilliantly because it used that paradigm, that example idea of how to build a game to a great success. Mm-hmm. To build on what you were talking about, though, I want to disagree with Archangel's premise
XXX
that the challenge in modern games remains the same in reference to mastering controls to get a high score or proceed to the next level. I think that that's one mechanical way of looking at video games, and there are a number of games that I enjoy playing that are mechanics-based games. Break it all the way down to a fighting game. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy fighting games. Football games, obviously, again, mastering the controls. How good are you on the sticks? On the other end of the spectrum, though, I think that what's really interesting is the idea of games where we're moving beyond simply saying, well, I want to challenge you to be able to press XXABY as in some order as best you can as a dexterity challenge, and go into a level where I'm involved in the story, I'm involved in the characters, I'm interacting with them. And that sort of world is building out of where role-playing games are. And that's, you know, like one of the things that was very creative inspirationally to me that I hear is when the BioWare folks talk about the dialogue system being a game mechanic. Mm-hmm. And how those dialogue trees allow me to start interacting in the fiction in a way that is completely has nothing to do other than me making selections with the game controls over how well I use those game controls. So I think there's a lot of other ways that we're going to be seeing progression in that.
Yeah.
Obviously, we brought it up again, so we'll just use Heavy Rain drink.
Yeah,
but like that's one way, and I think that was an immature execution on it at this point. However, what was great about it was that it was starting to push forward in that way. And at the same time, there's plenty of room for great mechanical games. Obviously, there's a number of them that we enjoy and we love and we play and have a great time.
And I think you're spot on in saying that there's these two branching paths of sort of challenge-based mechanical games and what is approaching trying to create virtual worlds to have an interactive experience that is a virtual space, I could say, rather than world. That you explore or that you interact with or that communicates something to you. And I think that as the technology advances, I get excited about that particular branch. But I just spent the beginning part of the show ranting and raving about how much I love Bastion for the other branch. So
there's a lot of places. A number of one of the most interesting or one of the most important pieces that figures into this equation also is obviously how well the design has been polished and balanced so that the play experience, because ultimately we are playing. I mean, the difference between a book and a television show and video games is that we're involved in it. We're actively engaged in what's going on, and we have a sense of control, whether it be direct or indirect. Shtick01 on Twitter asked, if a game is not enjoyable, and I think this goes to the balance question, if a game is not enjoyable, what makes you go from I'll pick it up later and give it another try to I'm done with this?
That was actually my pre-show question.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to reuse it because I like it.
No, it is a good question.
And it fits right
How
in.
How did you answer it?
How
Spoilers
did you answer
for
it?
Pre-show video.
Well, I think that certain games, from a design perspective, lend themselves to shorter play sessions. And that includes games with a crap ton of content in them. And so if you are a gamer who likes to marathon through shit, there are some games that you're going to – regardless of how fun the moment-to-moment gameplay mechanic is, if you're doing the same thing and it's sort of repetitive and you're doing the same kind of missions over and over again just because, you know, the developer wanted the game to be a good 10 hours longer, you're going to get burned out. That sort of stuff...
I think that's absolutely spot on. And L.A. Noire is a great example for me.
Yeah, so it's about how you approach individual titles based on what they're offering you. Now, you're not always able to approach a title that way. Like, you can't always say, okay, this is a game I'm going to play 20 minutes a day, whatever, especially if you're, you know, it's part of your work or whatever. There's some games you just have to go through. But some games just do a better job of, like, I think Bastion was one of those games. While it did use familiar gameplay mechanics, It was constantly introducing mm-hmm. new things, giving you new things to look at, to do. And it never got to that. Even all the way to the end, it never felt like stale.
Christian, what's your tipping point?
Well, for me, and while you guys are owned by Gamefly, I am not. For me, Gamefly made me more likely to put a game down and be like, I'm done with it, because there's so many other games I can just get a new experience. Whereas when I was purchasing, I still purchased quite a few games, but purchasing games, I was like, well, this is my game. But now I sit down and play a game, and if I don't have fun with it from the get-go, there are so many amazing games out there that I can go play and that might hook me.
Yeah.
And if I like it, I mean, if I can always come back to it later.
Sure.
I can always like, oh, you know, Jeff said really great things about, you know, whatever game.
I should probably drink.
I was trying to avoid that.
So I've kind of gotten to that point just from experience, and especially, and for me, it's the time pressure of a majority of the games that I'm playing are playing for coverage of some sort. So when I'm playing something on my own time, you know, I feel like that time's really precious.
Better enjoy it.
And so I am pretty much on a one strike rule. So I'll take a strike and I'll set it down. If it's got to the point where I'm, you know, just completely fed up, and I'll come back in a couple of days. And if it was a particularly frustrating, I might even hit the internet and be like, okay, is it something I'm hitting? Is there like something I'm just totally like obtuse and missing about the game? And I'll come back a second time. But if I sit down the second time and it's not clicking, you know what? That's sorry.
It's deadly premonitions.
That's
now let me ask you this. Give me an example of a game where you did that, where you were like, eh, and then put it down and came back and it actually clicked for you. Because I find that most of the time it's first impressions.
I'll have to go away and come back and answer that another time, because I can't do that off the cuff.
It's happening right now. I think tends to be the case. I think I think even with movies, you kind of know in the first 5 minutes where you're going to like it or not. But there are plenty of times where I've gone, I'm really not going to like this. And then by the end, I'm like, oh my God, I really liked this.
It's like beer.
And video games,
right?
Even more so. I think because video games are about learning systems, that sometimes systems seem really obtuse on their face, or you'll be knocking into things metaphorically, that once you kind of digest that system and get inside it and understand how things work, you love, or I will find that I will love the things that previously had frustrated me. So
Ninja Gaiden is my example of that. And for those reasons, I put it down, I came back to it later, and it clicked and made sense.
There you go.
Hopefully Weekend Confirmed is starting to make sense to you. If you've been along for 71 episodes.
Wow, how did that happen?
I don't know. It's kind of crazy, right? It's kind of awesome. Hopefully you've been enjoying them or have learned to enjoy them through the systems that we employ to hook you into the show. One of them is our regular music segment. And right now we got Sin with Bloodlust.
I can't bear
Bloodlust from Sin. And by the way, we have an excellent deal where if you dug the track, hey, you can go get it right now for free. All you have to do is go over to the Sin website, which is www.syn.us. Sign up for their mailing list, and they will send you back the MP3 of that song right there for free.
I heard that band is going to start doing episodes.
Sin episodes? And they will show great promise.
You know what? They're going to last a lot longer than that did, unfortunately. So there you go. They got a 2-song EP right now. They're looking for a record label, and it's good stuff. So hopefully you'll enjoy it. Hey, what you got to lose? Go sign up for the mailing letter and get that song for free and share
it's
with your friends.
Free!
All right. It's time for the news.
The news.
Which we have lots of things to talk about, so let's get right to it.
Okay, cool. So it was sort of an interesting week for the handheld with 3Ds.
Three Dizzles?
Three Dizzles, yes. Nintendo came out with their financials for the quarter, and I guess the 3DS has been... It sold 0.71 million units in the last quarter, but that trails the DS family's 1.44 million units, and Wii Hardware sold 1.56 million units in the same time period.
Dude, Iwata took a 50% pay cut.
He did.
True story.
Wow. Wow.
Panic has set in at Nintendo and caused them to...
Well, they've slashed the price, or will be slashing the price shortly. $80 off of the $250 tag.
Not too shabby.
So, not too shabby.
I mean, that's a pretty significant cut.
That's a crazy cut. Yeah.
I don't think this will save the 3DS from tablet or handheld gaming. But what I do think it will do is almost ensure that the Vita won't be a success either.
Okay.
It's a big punch.
So you're buying into the next, we're already on to the next part of the story.
Oh, sorry.
That's right.
But we can throw that in now, and then we'll discuss the whole big thing.
Sure. Yeah. So there's a bunch of factors that are sort of worth discussing about this. Now, the price drop... for the people who already bought the thing, Nintendo is doing something actually pretty cool. They're going to give away 20 free games.
NES and GBA.
This is called the Ambassador Program.
Correct.
So sweet. Those will all be 3D on my new 3D thing, right?
No, none of them are 3DS games.
Some of them might be. They might be up if they release upgraded versions of them. Are 3D. Might get those.
No, Jeff's got the details. There's 10 of each.
Yeah, 10 of each. So. let's see here. I'll go through the list really quick.
So there's 10 DS games.
Yeah.
And then there's 10 Game Boy.
NES.
Oh, the NES games. Yeah, they're all virtual consoles.
NES and GBA. So yeah, the NES stuff will include Super Mario Brothers, Donkey Kong Jr., Balloon Fight, Ice Climber, and Legend of Zelda. Pretty cool. The GBA offerings are Yoshi's Island, Super Mario Advance 3, Mario Kart, Super Circuit, Metroid Fusion, WarioWare Incorporated, Mega Micro Games, and Mario vs. Donkey Kong.
The important thing here is that if you have a 3DS right now, you need to, if you don't have regular access to the internet, you need to make the effort, go to a Starbucks or something, because all you have to do to take advantage of this offer is log into the store before August 11th. So make sure it's August 11th, right? I remember.
August 11th at midnight.
August 11th, yes.
Right, so... Take your 3DS out. Go someplace where you can get to the internet if you don't have a regular Wi-Fi connection at home or for whatever reason, wired or whatever. And make sure you log in so you can get these at least on your account. Because once you've got them, I mean, you'll be able to go back and get them when you want to. So you'll be set.
You guys all have 3DSs, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay. I don't have one either. I did see a few comments of folks who were saying, you know, I might actually buy one before the price drop so I can get these games.
Really?
Well, yeah, I know. That's
$80.
That was kind of my reaction, although a lot of these are not going to be, Nintendo's saying they're not going to release in any other way. So this will be your only way to get, you know,
They're good old games, not on good old games, but they are good games that are old Nintendo games. It's just, for me, and this was kind of my pre-show question, it's kind of like Nintendo's giving a little, but only because they took out backwards compatibility. Like, all those GBA games I could play on my DS already.
Right.
And so, like, here you go. Now you get them for free.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm in the camp of, I think the gesture is nice and kind of cool, but the actual what you get.
And it's nice of them to announce.
Your mileage may vary.
To announce up front, because oftentimes I feel like studios, like, do a price cut, and then people get pissed, and then they backpedal, and they're like, here's your free shit. It's nice to see Nintendo, like, address the concern head on, knowing that people might be upset.
Let me throw you a few thoughts from folks who, actually this came from my Google Plus, which is turning out to be a good place to have conversations, especially about topical things like this when they happen.
I like the plussing.
Yeah, this blew up because I think it's really cool because the conversations happen very quickly and you get a lot of feedback. So a few thoughts. A very good friend, Anthony Parisi, said this about this subject. He said, I think the biggest issue I have with the 3DS is with Nintendo.
His very good friend circle.
Cute. They released the system with one of the worst launch lineups in history, and at all the press conferences leading up to the launch, Reggie kept assuring us there would be 30 games within the release window, yet all of those games were shovelware. I think that if Nintendo wants to have a successful system launch, they'll need to release a new Mario Adventure alongside that system launch. Nintendo cannot expect to drive sales through the roof and keep momentum going when all you have are three versions of Nintendogs, Steel Diver, and a game that originally came out 16 years ago. So... Yeah. I think
Steel Diver should have been the free game, downloadable Steel Diver.
Which is interesting because, like, the length issues aside, Steel Diver is kind of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a fun game. Well,
if you want people to be excited about your system, I guess it's people who already have it, but give them something in 3D.
They certainly miscalculated on Nintendogs because if we go back in time to the DS, Nintendogs was a runaway hit. It was one of the titles that really propelled the DS from being a Nintendo handheld that dudes had to something all of a sudden girls had, women had, people played with. But exactly.
And it's not a novelty anymore. It's been there, done that.
It's also been replaced by the phone and the tablet for that type of game. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, Fruit Ninja, how it's a perfect iPhone game because you're bored and you don't care if you use your place. But as a Kinect game, it's like, oh, it's a little... And I may have mentioned this, like my in-laws, when they come out and visit, they used to always bring their DSs and sit and play Sudoku or whatever. Mm-hmm. Never anymore. Like after they got iPhones, you just don't see the DSs. They haven't bought 3DSs and it fills that niche.
Okay, so then here's a little conversation that happened on Twitter between N-Guy Kroll and Dan Ackerman, both of whom are out in New York, and they're in the you guys know who these folks are. Okay. N-Guy asked a Twitter responder, is the 3DS the canary in the coal mine with youth adoption of iOS in the future? And Dan jumped in and said, well, anyone who thinks the dedicated handheld game devices aren't going extinct is insane. So, do you agree with Christian and these guys that the handheld, dedicated handheld device world is over?
They're going to go niche. If they can't survive at the cost it currently costs. I'm saying cost too much. They can't survive at the expense that they are now. I think they could work really well as a niche thing, but as a mass market thing, yeah, I agree with these
guys. I'm totally with Christian on this too. Like, I just don't think that they can. Again, it's when the Vita comes out, you're going to have people walking into a store and, you know, whether it's a kid with their mom or whatever, they're going to look at this and go, well, we got the PS3. You can get the full-on console for $300, mm-hmm. or you can spend $250 on a handheld device with comparably priced software. You know, I mean, they're splitting their user base. Sony is, potentially, right? Because you'll have a niche. You know, you'll have some crossover, but that's going to be niche. And then, you know, what do you buy? Are you really going to support both? You know, especially if you're a multi-console gamer to begin with.
The solution also is not to add phone functionality to these devices. That's not the solution.
You don't want to talk on your 3DS?
No. But I do think the reason that the DS continues to sell well, and there is a market for young people,
absolutely,
with a device that is basically indestructible.
Okay.
You know, so you have this thing that closes that you can drop it pretty much and it doesn't really, you know, you can't really mess it up too badly. It's the tech in it is not that fragile, really, honestly, you know, because you're not going to give your kid this glass device and the kid doesn't need a phone.
So that's an argument that's come up certainly in a number of forums. I saw this when people talking about it on NeoGAF of I'm not going to buy my kid a cell phone to play games with.
That's
when
the touch.
I think people
that,
do.
That's the immediate
touch.
Answer. Is there you go? There's the touch.
But I also I think there is a very viable market for the. I don't want to give my kid this fragile piece of tech, and he doesn't need a phone, or she doesn't need a phone, and this thing is got a lot of kid software on it, and
sure.
It, you know, and it's.
But you can make
durable.
A lot of software for any platform.
Of course.
I mean, that's. I think that the final differentiating point here is that and Vita probably is in the toughest spot with this is control system. Is you know, we still see that basically the games that I enjoy the most on the iOS platform are the ones that really take advantage of touch and gyroscope.
Right.
And when you get beyond that, you know, I mean,
exactly.
For as much as people have been enjoying, I have to pull it up real quick because the name just flipped away from my head. As much as people enjoy Death Rally, which was done by Remedy, and it looks beautiful. You know what? I just get irritated with it because it does look great and it moves fast on the screen and whatever, but using virtual sticks and stuff on the screen, screw it.
Same but this problem, is where, right? I agree with Christian that it's a niche, because I'm in the same boat, and that's why I'm still excited about the Vita, is because I'm going to have that wonderful experience. But
and the Vita goes hardcore for that. It's got two thumbsticks, it's got back touch, it's got front touch, it's got buttons, it's got shoulder buttons. It leverages all of those things that a dedicated game machine can do by having controls and being a game machine first.
But I'm not going to carry my Vita around with me all the time.
A lot of people don't have a time or place for the Vita. I think, you know, Jeff will. I think I will. Some of it, like, if you're traveling and you're a hardcore gamer, you will. But most people...
So, to me, the place the Vita needs to start thinking about where to compete is, how does it come up against this thing and I'm holding an iPad in my hand? Because I can't carry it... Because an iPad's not as portable as a phone, right? You have to have some way of carrying it around.
I still think it's the same issue, is that the iPad is not positioned as a gaming device.
But it is a gaming device.
It is.
It very clearly wants to be and has become a gaming device.
The add-on to the iPad is gaming. In the same sense, I'm saying don't add on don't tack on a phone to a game device.
All right.
You know, because if you start out with a thing that you can justify for all its other uses and there's also gaming, it's like, yeah, well, I have my phone because I'm going to bring my phone around with me all the time. I need that. It's awesome that there's games on it and there's good games and I can pull out my phone and waste some time. But I would never just have my gaming device on me. You know, I'm standing in line at the bank. I can play a game for a couple of minutes, but I would never bring my PlayStation Vita to stand in line at the bank. Okay, I have right. it because I have, to have my phone.
So maybe, you know, let me throw this out. What if Vita was more akin to an iPad, but a gaming iPad first and then iPad function second, as opposed to an iPad tablet first with gaming tacked onto it?
I don't think that's the right position for the market. I don't think someone goes... Oh, thank God my gaming device has Excel.
But we say there's a finite number of things we're going to carry in our hands. But
I think the flip side is true. I think somebody goes, thank God my Excel device has games on it.
I don't know. I'd buy my little brother, you know, gave me this idea because, like, everybody makes fun of the PlayStation phone or the Sony Xperia. But I'd buy the crap out of an iPhone that had a slide-out controls.
Yeah.
Mm. That'd be awesome. And I think that's kind of more
you mean slide-out, like, dual sticks?
I don't know the most elegant way to handle it. The touch nubs certainly don't work well on the PlayStation phone or whatever it's really called.
So what do you mean by slide-out controls then?
I'm not a damn engineer. I'm not a doctor. Even just simple D-pad, I don't know.
All right, I don't know.
It could be done.
So $180 3DS, verdict.
Well, versus $250.
No, just verdict in general. I mean, what do we think? What impact is Nintendo going to enjoy? Clearly, based off the financials, they're hoping desperately to some people's eyes to stimulate sales of the 3DS.
I think most people are still waiting for a game that they're like, dude, I need this device now.
Yeah.
Like, you got the tech guys. The guys that wanted it for the tech have it already.
The 3DS will never be as popular as the DS, the GBA, or the Game Boy. It's never going to this product will not have that level of success.
It's bad that the best game out on the system is Ocarina of Time. That's bad. That's a bad thing.
That and your very first 1 million unit seller. Your very first 1 million unit seller is Ocarina of Time. And I think that speaks a great deal to what Anthony was talking about in his comment. Where were the games?
Yeah.
Where were the games to really go with this thing? Why is it just now that we're seeing Star Fox? And Star Fox is out in Japan, but it's not even out here yet. It's coming out in September in North America. But, you know, you've got to have... Especially for a Nintendo product, you've got to have those big time Nintendo fan supported titles.
And it's new tech, you know. Why would you not make sure that you had all guns blazing when you're hitting the market?
How awesome would the 3DS have been if it came out this holiday at 180 with Mario, Luigi's Mansion 2, all these games that are going to be out then? And if it just, and even if it's going head to head with Vita at the same relaunch point, it's like, yeah, we're out, bitch. We're 180. These are the awesome games we have. That would have helped the system go gangbusters. Why'd they launch so early?
That's actually a really interesting point of view. I like that. That's actually a very good thought point.
Very much.
All right, there you go. Something to stir your kettle.
Yeah. So this sort of rolls into what, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about what impact this price drop's going to have on the Vita, if any.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I'm sort of in the camp that I think people, it's really going to be dictated by software for most people. Like, they're going to look to see what has the best games, what they're interested in, and that's what they're going to go for. I don't know that the $80 difference is, it might make a difference to the mom who's bringing her kid in and has to pick something up. You know, younger crowd might end up with more 3DSs than Vitas.
Well, but on that point, $40 a game for 3DS games is too high.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, back to that conversation we were having a little bit about mobile phones, which I think it's probably going to come up here when we talk about Vita as well. Groove Coaster, I'm thrilled, like having a great time with it. I paid 99 cents for it.
Yeah.
Okay, now I hate the idea that the iTunes store dropped the value of software to 99 cents. You know, maybe this game is successful at 99 cents, maybe it's not. But when the difference, you know, when the delta, price delta is 99 cents to $40, then that's going to really raise, it's not like 99 cents to $5. It's 99 cents to $40.
Right.
It's too much.
Where I agree with the canary in the coal mine analogy is that if 3DS continues to do poorly and Vita comes out and does poorly, that may be the last we see of
portable gaming devices.
Portable gaming devices.
So what do you think happens with Vita? So how much, so again, as Jeff was bringing up, analysts have said it puts the Vita in a tough position.
Yeah, some are saying it puts it in a tough position. Some are saying that it's really telling of how afraid Nintendo is of the Vita. And then other people are like, you know, like I said, it's not going to make the people that want to buy a Vita want to buy a Vita over a 3DS already anyway, or they're going to look at the title, the software that comes out, and make the decision based on that. It's not going to be the early adopters that buy it for the tech that determine the fate of these things.
Having played with it, the Vita is one hell of a piece of hardware.
Agreed.
And, so I'm looking at my iPad again because it's become such a big deal. Like, one of the things that was immediately captivating about the iPad is how sexy the screen is. Mm-hmm. You haven't seen sexy in a screen till you've held a Vita in your hand and looked at that OLED, because that thing is ridiculously gorgeous. And the way, what it can do with a game, and though I'm not completely sold and in love with the Uncharted title, how amazing it alone that it looks on that device is pretty revolutionary. I mean, I hate to throw around words like that, but it's pretty freaking,
it's certainly compelling.
Spectacular.
There's
the
no
way
and
that
there's
thing
no
looks.
Counterpoint on the 3DS in terms of, like, you look at a game on that system and go, dude.
And well, I don't even think the 3D does that
from the get go. I've been
at first it does.
Not if you're walking by like display kiosks. I think if you see Uncharted running on a Vita, you walk over and you're like, holy, oh my, this is.
Right.
If you walk by the display kiosk and there's Pilot Wings and you're like, eh.
To me, the 3DS, and people have given me heat for this, but to this day, I don't think that the 3DS is that great of a piece of design. It's not as bad as the Fatty was, but still, you open the thing up, the top screen, you've got two screens, but they're asymmetrical. Now the top screen is this weird widescreen format, and it has to have the black bezel around it, and the 3D effect only works when you're in the sweet spot, so if you're playing...
I don't know, I think it's a lot of hindsight. Because I think
I said that the outset.
I think the first time, I mean, certainly the first time I saw the 3DS, I was impressed with the 3D and impressed with the glassesless and how it all looked, came together. I mean, if you look at Super Street Fighter 4 3D, I think it's an impressive looking.
It looks good.
Piece of
software. I'm not arguing that. No. However, okay, like from the outset, not only was I down on that, but the fact is, I'd rather have, like, one of the things I pointed out right off the bat was how nice is the XL, because those screens are nice and vibrant. And we've gotten accustomed to big screens. I mean, maybe cell phones have pushed it a little bit too far. Zav isn't completely in love with his Thunderbolt because of how damn big the screen is on it. But I certainly know that, like, when I look at my iPhone and my Nexus, I'm like, I'd like a little bit larger screen. And I see some other phones that have a little bit larger screens, like Jeff's phone. I'm like, you know, like, I like having a larger screen. It, like, gives you more real estate, more to play with. Does it have to be an iPad? I don't know. But, like, the Vita screen... That thing's awesome.
Well,
and
certainly,
it's good size.
If the next iPad has that Retina display and maybe can push a few more polygons than it currently does, I think
this thing pushes polygons fine.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not going to look like it doesn't look like a Vita.
No, it's never going to look like a Vita because it's not a dedicated gaming device.
Right, but the next iteration, who knows? It might
real
Delta
racing. Real Racing 2 HD on that is
really good.
Pretty dope. 1080p out to your TV if you have an Apple TV using the iPad to control. It looks pretty awesome.
It does look pretty awesome. I agree. It looks really good.
It's kind of like playing a Wii U. Actually.
So shall we move on to some Duke-related?
We could. We spent a lot of time talking about that. I'm really interested. So in the show comments, please Hop into this when we really get into the handheld discussion. It can be about the, you know, success or failure of the price point, software, what's going to happen with Vita. But I'd like to get some feedback from you guys. We'll catch that up next week.
Yes. Yeah, so this is kind of a funny story, actually. It was announced yesterday that Duke Nukem, at least the PC for now, is getting a patch that will add two more weapons to Duke's rotation. So he'll have four weapons at once instead of just two.
Now I'll buy it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Good call. I'm glad you waited for the patch. Is this the patch that adds the fun?
Yeah. Well, one would hope.
It also adds I'm not holding my breath. To the title. So it's Duke, nuke them.
Oh.
Just, you know.
Instant sales. George Broussard was actually on Shaq News Chatty. And when this is, you know, back when the initial sort of announcement that Duke would only be able to carry two guns came out, there was a lot of community uproar. Everybody was sort of jumped on all over Gearbox because they thought that was their decision. And George Broussard came in and said, this is a direct quote. He said, "Yes, blame us for it if you want. It may change in the future, and I don't know what will happen with it, but it was us. I stand by it, too, as you cannot discount designing games for a modern world, and part of that world is consoles, where the bulk of the sales can be. And on those consoles, you have a controller. We tried for a long time to support lots of guns, but we simply could not find a nice way to map it to a controller despite trying four or five designs. We gave it enough time and decided to stop swimming against the current and adopt what was basically the, quote, standard, quote."
Well, so, you know, it's just one more thing that changed in modern times during the course of Duke development.
Yeah. I mean,
a couple things changed.
It was
things happened.
In the early days, it was developed in a bomb shelter, completely shut off from society, I guess. I don't know. That's just sort of a...
So the mood for weapons is nice, but whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on. So Dragon Age 2 disappeared from Steam. EA has since come out and confirmed that it's because of the DLC and their virtual currency system. Rigmarole. That
because
they have
it, so they have a store sales system within the game, which is verboten in Steam.
Right. What do you guys think about that? Just do you guys think that EA or Valve is sort of more or less right in this? Because Valve has basically said, look, you know, if you've got DLC for your game, in order to be able to sell your game on our service, everything has to be available.
Yeah,
for purchase.
Yeah, you have to be able to buy through, like, through transactions Steam. Will take place through the Steam interface, not mm-hmm. through your game.
And EA was like, no, we need them to buy these, you know, whatever they are, BioWare coins or whatever the hell they're called, BioWare points to, like, buy these additional pieces of content.
It's business posturing. I mean, both of them have territory to defend.
Think about it from a consumer perspective. I mean, what is better for you as the consumer? I feel like consistency. Mm-hmm. But I also is Steam saying you can't buy anything in game, or
simple monetary systems are always the best. This is why although there are reasons for both sides, one of the things that I like about the PlayStation Network store is that I buy things in dollars. It's very simple. It's
right.
It's $4.99. I know what $4.99 is. I put $4.99 in my wallet and I buy something. It's very simple. I don't have to go buy Microsoft points and have leftover residual points and all that kind of stupid nonsense.
I like Spacebox.
Yeah, fair enough. And David DeMartini, basically EA's senior VP of global e-commerce, his statement on the whole thing was, at EA, we do offer our games and content to all major download services, including GameStop, Amazon Direct to Drive, and Steam. Unfortunately, Steam has adopted a restrictive terms of service, which limit how developers interact with customers and to sell downloadable content. No mm-hmm. other downloadable service has adopted this practice. Consequently, some of our games have been removed from Steam.
Still get them on Origin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming soon.
And they're still in talks with, Valve and EA are still talking, trying to figure this out. I don't know. I think it's kind of silly.
It kind of implies to some extent that Steam maybe, or EA is very confident in Origin, and they don't think Steam is as big of a, gorilla in the room as others think. Because this same thing plays out in the Apple app, iTunes store, sure. and App Store with, in-app purchases. But Apple's the behemoth where they've kind of said, fuck you, this is what we're doing it. And that's kind of what's happening here, where Steam is, they planted their flag. And it'll be interesting to see if Origin catches on and how this plays out.
Great difference in scale in the EA is yeah. much larger and has much larger demand.
So Red Faction went bye-bye.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Armageddon in more ways than one.
I guess. I mean, they're pretty, I guess, so it didn't sell as well as they expected it to. And
well, I think, and it was interesting because one of the things that the CEO of THQ pointed to was that it didn't review as well as it should have.
Yeah, that's the whole Metacritic.
So, and yeah, I mean, so Metacritic is the barometer for that. However, I think that, you know, judging both from critical response and from player response, that this Red Faction was not as well received as its predecessor.
Completely different game.
It was a completely different game. So it's an interesting question because they, as a developer, it's, I would love to know the genesis of why, after the success of its predecessor, did they decide to go in such a different, like, we're going to go underground. We're going to go story-driven. They're going to be monsters. Okay.
I was just going to say, I think one of the series' core problems is that they tied the whole thing to Mars.
It to Mars as opposed to
some planet that was less brown. Because they're stuck there.
Should have called it the Beautiful Faction.
Yeah, I mean, the whole fiction, they could have branched off, but the whole fiction always revolves around Red Faction and this conflict, corporate versus rebels on Mars, and it's just, I don't know, it's kind of, Armageddon doesn't feel as much like the other games, which is, you know, why I'm still making my way through it, but I don't know, man. It's that setting just, I think, they kind of burned
themselves
out.
Maybe it's by virtue of my really liking Total Recall.
I saw the new one.
Yeah, I saw the new one at Comic-Con.
Looks really good. Be excited. Yeah.
Colin Farrell
looks
really
afraid to be excited.
It really does look good.
All right, I'm going to be a tad, I'm going to keep from getting too hooked into that. But maybe it's from liking the game so much, or that series, that movie so much, that I was hooked into the series. And the two original Red Faction games were fun. I enjoyed them quite a lot. You know, their big thing was geomodding. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that carried over to the destructibility. And the packs added a neat part to...
Traversal.
What was the name of that Red Faction? The one before Armageddon. It just flew right out of my head.
Gorilla, yes.
And Gorilla. So Gorilla had its own thing. But then here, I felt like they sort of lost all that because they felt this need to do monsters. Right? The monster element was weird.
We'll have all the sales of the last game plus all the sales of a Gears of War type game.
That's what they
think.
They gave this game the sales expectations of a sequel. They wanted this game to sell like a game that was building on the footsteps of Guerrilla that did so well, kind of like Assassin's Creed to Assassin's Creed 2, and they had these expectations, it seemed like, for this Red Faction, but it's a totally different game.
And I think one of the things that's cool about the idea of Red Faction was this idea of humanity being projected just off of Earth and then bringing in those social conflicts. And, you know, hey, Civil War is always a tense and interesting subject. You had a very interesting thing to play with as your dramatic tension point. You didn't need to bring in oogly booglies.
TM.
True.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think, you know, back to my original point, if they had brought, say Armageddon had been set in a completely different fictional planet, I honestly think it probably would have sold better because you wouldn't have had that legacy of fans that were immediately pissed off on its face because it was a different game.
I think people vastly underestimate design and imaging as far as sales. And what I think the biggest downfall of Armageddon is that it looked generic. It looked like generic third-person shooter with generic monsters.
Because you got the space monsters in there.
Space monsters looked like every other game all of a sudden. And I think differentiating yourself from the crowd is eight-tenths of, you know.
So let's ask the audience then as another point to respond on here of, did you want more Red Faction? How did you feel about where they went with this game, and how do you feel about them about now saying that it's on the shelf and probably gone? Well, that's about what we've got for Newsday. Before we are gone, though, we always do one last thing. That would be finishing moves.
Yeah.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
I'll go right into Mr. Jeff Mattis. Jeff, finish him.
So everybody, if you're looking for something funny to kick your Friday or your weekend off, there is a nice, cool little video on Dorkly called "I Wish I Had a Portal Gun."
So good.
We watched it earlier. It is very good.
So anyway, there you go.
There you go. Christian Spicer, finish him.
Not to be the sentimental or Debbie Downer, but it's just appreciate and take time to appreciate and let your loved ones know you love them. Our time on this earth is short. My grandmother is currently in hospice less than a year after my grandfather passed. Mm. And it's just one of those things where we love our games, but we also take the time to let those around you that support your hobby and support your interests, just let them know you love them and appreciate every day.
Hear, hear.
That's awesome.
I kind of wish we ended on that one because I... I agree with you 100%. Spend time with and let the people you love know that you love them. It's important.
Agreed.
Wow. I don't want to.
That's really deep, but maybe we're finished.
Oh, and farts and boobs. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice. All right, Spidey. Yeah. Jeff Cannata.
I'm actually going to use my finishing move to recommend a book. And
books and board games.
Books and board games. I'm going analog, bros.
Surprise.
Got to keep that in there. People that know me will probably think I'm going to talk about Dance with Dragons, which I'm, according to my Kindle, 30% through, and is so good. But that's not what I'm going to talk about. Just today.
That's that game with John Dunbar in it, right?
I don't get it.
Dances with Dragons.
Who's done?
John Dunbar's. Never mind. It's the lead derailed character from Dances with Wolves.
Oh gosh! Wow, missed that one. Anywho, one of my favorite authors just announced. I just saw today that there's an announcement of his next book coming out September 20th. His name is Neal Stephenson, and if you like video games, I'm guaranteeing you will like his work. He's written Snow Crash and Diamond Age, and one of my favorite books, Cryptonomicon, and the trilogy that I consider to be my favorite books of all time. The Baroque Cycle. His newest book is called Reamdy, and I'm very excited about it, and I hope you guys are as well.
There's also a new Preston Child book up for pre-order. If you haven't read the Pendergast novels around Agent Pendergast, you really should, because they're freaking ridiculously awesome.
Dude, and, reading.
Yeah. And so I'm going to finish up here right here with, hey, as it turns out, competition amongst publishers in sports games was a damn good idea. And obviously we're seeing, I think we're finally seeing, and maybe people would argue that it's been there for a while, but I think we're really starting to see the influence of there not being any competition in the football world, where EA Sports continues to come at each year's version of their football games more concerned about what do they do to make on inroads into bringing more people into their franchise with new features and new elements, as opposed to anyone challenging them on the core football game that they put on the field. Because when it came down to that, when they had 2K against them was when both of those two games pushed each other on the game, which is football that I primarily play. And the same thing happened to them in the NBA world, where 2K got serious about it. NBA 2K became an awesome game. So serious, in fact, that when EA tried to compete with it most recently, they tapped out. Competition sometimes really does have a good effect. Maybe we need to get back to it in the football world. That's the big show for today. Don't forget to go by sin.us. Get your free copy of Bloodlust from them just for signing up for their mailing list. What else we got going on? Del Rio has a show coming next Thursday, August the 4th at the Coyote Lounge in Panoma, California. So make sure and check that out. If you're listening to the radio later on today, that's a Friday. You can hear me on the Petros and Money show at 5:50. Be talking some sports. If you're around Long Beach, go down to the Tilted Kilt. We're going to be at the Tilted Kilt.
Wow.
Yeah.
You.
Nice.
Come to the Tilted Kilt. What else we got going on? What are you up to, Christian? We'll see you again in a few weeks, of course, as usual, but what are you up to between now and then?
Yeah, I'm doing a couple of military benefit shows that I'm really proud of. I love giving back to them, but unfortunately, general public can't come to that, but you can catch, if you want more comedy, maybe highbrow comedy, our podcast, Cool Party Guys, stand-ups, sit down, and I've started doing some talking head video things on Game Rant, which is fun. I know you're friends with some of those guys, Jeff.
Yeah, very cool.
So
cool.
Those are fun things to check out.
Awesome.
And Mr. Jeff Cannata, always every day on the Totally Rad Show.
Yep.
TotallyRadShow.com. Also on Revision 3. And anything else popping?
Just shot a new web series yesterday and the day before, and that should be out eventually. So
when we know, when you know, we'll know, exactly. And everyone will know, and we'll all watch it.
Indeed.
All right, there you go, folks. Hope you will drop by the official show thread. Let us know what's going on. We threw you some questions, but we're always open to anything else. Until next week, that's it. That's the weekend confirmed. We're a ghost. You get my voice heard over these airwaves. All I gotta do is get me some airplay. Show you that I love you. Show you that I care. Show you that I listen. Show you that I'm here. I sold you all of that. I sold you everything. I gave my all to y'all. Following those are 3 rings. You know more about me. Anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. Everything I ever wanted. Everything I ever needed. But I'm still struggling. Still competing for your love. Your heart and you. Always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start, I'll do anything for you. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers.
The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.